Either you do it for the cause and you take action, or you do it because you want attention. You can't have it both ways.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 117 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
I'm in a tremendously good mood today.
Is it because the sun's out?
Partially, yeah. That always helps.
Or is it because you've got a brand new bottle of Brothers Palmer Violet English Cider in your hand?
That certainly helps, yeah. Yes. This brand new flavour from Brothers, which is going down rather well.
It's pretty nice. Yum. I love that we don't plug stuff, and it's just actually just talking because it's the ultimate drink on a hot summer's day.
So I've heard.
That's actually really nice.
That's almost like a tagline, Mark.
What we've got on today's episode, guys?
Oh, all sorts.
The main review this time is Lords of Chaos, which is, I think, quite different for us. We're not doing the massive release that's on at the cinema. A bit more smaller, so I'm intrigued what you both think to this one.
And from smaller to larger, our rewatch is going to be the Ridley Scott sci-fi screamer, Alien.
That's huge. Like that. You should build it up more. There should be like big explosions going off.
Confetti
and all that.
Cannons, yeah. All the sorts.
It's a huge one.
We've got a great topic as well. We're going to discuss the top three movie rebels. And I'm quite open with this. You know, anyone that you consider embodies a rebellious spirit. That's the only rule I'm going to apply to it.
I think I can get Quentin then somehow.
You probably could.
I'm changing one as we speak right now. We've got a brand new quiz coming up as well. This is going to be huge. And do you know what? I'm going to give you the name now.
Ooh.
Of course I'm not.
Oh, you bastard.
Every single time.
Yeah, fall for it every time. I'm going to keep doing it.
Talking about keep doing it, we're going to be visiting MMD Movie Masturbates, and we're going to be talking about Mr. Denis Villeneuve.
One of the biggest responses I've ever seen.
I know, right?
And I didn't think it'd be that big because he's only done about six films.
Oh, chuckload of response.
It was huge.
It was huge, and we'll have a bit of unscientific analysis later on
and
see
quite
how huge it was.
Yes.
Love it.
Also, talking about how huge it was, I've got an announcement for you both.
Oh,
what?
It's a huge one. As we're sitting here right now, we've just hit 10 million downloads.
Yes!
So let's have a toast.
All right.
Not bad, eh?
Pretty good. 10 million.
I know.
God.
I think we should have a drink for every download.
We'll be on our ass.
From Brothers. But let's have a drink and let's enjoy this. Because it's a lot. That's been nearly 4.5 years to hit
that.
It's pretty good.
And every time we reach one of these milestones, we always say essentially the same thing, but it bears repeating that when we launched this show, we were hoping to get 100, weren't we?
In the first year.
If we thought we can get 100 plays in the first year, we're a success.
Yes. So we've done that.
We've done that, yes. Amazing. Quite comfortably,
And I think we should probably get drunk in a few weeks. I think
it's been
a long time coming.
We've got all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast today as well. We will be giving away an absolute ton of prizes, of course, and we will bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. But before we move on to today's episode, I wanted to briefly talk about the last one. We are known around these parts for being a little bit potty-mouthed.
Yeah.
Mark and I especially. But to be fair, Gemma can be a right filthy cow at times as well.
I've got video evidence.
You know. Last episode, we went completely overboard. It was undoubtedly our sweariest episode we've ever done. It was shocking. So much so that I ran the numbers.
Oh no. Not the stats again.
On the last episode, we had one prick, four dicks, five wanks, 33 shits and 111 fucks.
111.
111 fuck. Most of them were you, pal.
That's mad.
I even dropped a C-bomb as well, if you remember,
did.
Which we very rarely do. But 111, that's too many fucks.
Oh, boy.
That's too many fucks, you guys.
Yeah. That's literally what... Was it Fred Durst in Limp Bizkit that had that song about that?
Yeah.
Should we try and cut it down a bit?
Well, I think we should make a conscious effort to swear less this week. I'm not saying no swearing.
No.
I'm not entirely sure that's possible, but swear less. Yeah?
Yep.
No fucking promises. Let's get started. It's time for our top three movie rebels. As I said in the intro, no real rules to this, just someone who embodies a rebellious spirit in whatever form that may take. Mark, I think you're a bit of a rebel, aren't you?
Biggest rebel.
Only a rebel without a cause.
Yeah. Rebel without a clue. You can go first.
It's quite an obvious one. I'm sure you'll both agree it's a rebel. It's Tyler Durden from Fight Club.
Ah. Nice.
He doesn't give a fuck, does he?
I'm swearing.
But he doesn't, especially when it comes to society. He does not care. I love this film. Fight Club, for me, is one of the greatest films ever made. I'll put it in my top 10.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't care. The way he enters, the way he has that jacket, the hair, the glasses, what he wears, he just unleashes this kind of... just this beast of a man. That's what he is, and he's amazing. He's a member of a fight club that basically has come together to beat the shit out of each other and just unleash this masculinity against each other's faces. And that's the whole reason he's designed this fight club. If that's not the actions of a rebel, I don't know what is. But if you want to take it to the next level, he builds up this whole organization, Project Mayhem, which is what it says on the fucking... Oh, I can't keep swearing.
No,
not bad,
Gemma,
not bad.
That's swearing.
No, we won't edit, but we'll say... which is there to produce a lot of danger, and it's not a nice club to be part of. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Not
yes.
at all.
And he blows up a credit card building. For me, that is the ultimate. But he doesn't care. Every scene he's in, he just seems like a rebel. But he looks cool as he does it, so you don't hate him. But he's the ultimate for me. As soon as you said the topic, the first name that came to me was, Brad Pitt in Fight Club.
But what you have to remember, of course, spoiler alert for a 20-year-old film, is he's not real.
Mm-hmm. What?
did you not get to the end of the film? No.
No, broke.
Oh, no.
He's kind of the personification of the id of Ed Norton's character.
Yeah.
So it's all in his head. It's his rebellious side coming out because he's this kind of milquetoast office drone, isn't he? So it's the rebel he wishes he was coming out in this alter ego.
He also kind of looks like a messed up James Dean anyway. Like
yes,
the red
with the
jacket,
kind of red jacket, the glasses,
Definitely.
His hair's kind of got that quiff at the front. He's a pretty evil guy.
He's not a good un.
And it does show what happens if you don't get enough sleep.
Yeah.
It's not good. So if you start not sleeping, be careful, because the next thing you know, you've organised a whole group of people. Yeah. I like the name Project Mayhem as well.
Yeah.
That's good.
And it's always good to see Jared Leto get his face smashed in.
One of your favourite scenes, isn't it?
Look at that smile. It's like the Joker.
Yeah.
Ear to ear.
I think you knew I was going to have that one, didn't you, guys?
I did,
Brilliant.
Gemma, what have you got?
Well, my first one is Randall P. McMurphy from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Excellent choice.
You talk about a character that's a rebel. Jack Nicholson is the ultimate rebel in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
But McMurphy, if you didn't know the story, he winds up in a psychiatric hospital after feigning mental illness to avoid a stint in the clink because he thinks he's going to get a bit of an easier ride. And from the get-go, he's kind of a maverick anyway. He's not really a good guy, but he's got charisma and charm that's oozing out of all of the pores on his body. And once he establishes who the authority figures are, that's it. He does his best to try and sort of gain favour with the patients so then he can challenge them. But of course, nothing comes in the form of an authoritative figure than Nurse Ratched.
Bitch.
The scary mother chucker. He sees oppression.
Not even forming the same with a bitch, chucker, and fuck.
Chucker's not as well, isn't it?
I know, but
you can say that as much as you like.
All right.
Chuck. But in her, he sees this oppression. He sees that he needs to resist against her and get all the patients to rally around and do the exact opposite, as she says, because she's not nice to them. She grinds them down. She tries all their weak spots and exploits them in front of everybody. So he starts hiding his meds. He challenges her way of thinking and starts to, come up with a jailbreak even, which they do, but unfortunately has very tragic consequences. And of course, it all culminates in one big fight fest where he nearly chokes her to death. So what does she do? Spoiler alert. She lobotomizes him.
It's one of the most harrowing scenes in film, that lobotomy scene.
It really is.
Heartbreaking.
It takes away the essence of who Randall P. McMurphy is, and he's just a shell of a man. If nobody's seen this film, well, sorry, I've kind of ruined it for you, but hey, you should be watching it right now. But their rivalry and his rebellion against her whole regime is one of the most memorable examples of who a rebel is in Hollywood.
I find it very difficult to take the film seriously after Spaced did their kind of homage to it and Daisy's scrubbing the windows with them all and the Indian guy and she's like, we shouldn't do this anymore, we should leave. Who's with me? And no one goes.
No one does.
But it's a real harrowing film, isn't it?
It's really
horrible.
And It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia did a riff on it as well. And of course, Sunny also stars Danny DeVito, who is in the film.
Have you guys watched the new series yet?
Not yet.
Of Always Sunny, of course.
How is it?
Amazing. The final episode... If you haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but the way the episode ends, Mac's dance routine at the end of the final episode is genius.
I've heard about this.
Yeah.
I got a lot of praise.
It's next on my list to watch the whole lot in one go, like I did with The Office.
Yeah.
And everything else.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Get involved.
Yeah.
And I will finish off the first round with a bang obvious one. Come on now. It's Han Solo, played by Harrison Ford in the Star Wars film series. For me, he is the ultimate rebel. He's the bad boy smuggler operating under the nose of the Galactic Empire. He's the guy who'll do anything for a few thousand credits or for the love of the princess. He's the guy who will shoot a bounty hunter in cold blood rather than be captured. And he did shoot him in cold blood.
Yep.
I will not have any of this Greedo shot first bullshit. Mr. Lucas.
No. Mm-hmm.
You can keep your fucking revamp versions. I'm going with the originals.
Ben just saw it.
Sorry about that.
111 we need to beat.
You know, and Han is also the guy who, when the princess tells him she loves him, he says, I know.
Yep.
Come on now.
It is very, very cool.
A charming rogue, a true rebel at heart. But for all of his rebellious ways, the thing I love about him is he loves his friends, and he demonstrates this by returning to assist Luke in the destruction of the Death Star in the first film, or setting out to rescue Luke from the frozen wastelands of Hoth in Empire Strikes Back. He also embraces his destiny as a rebel of a different kind when, in Return of the Jedi, he becomes a leading figure in the Rebel Alliance, helping to take down the force field on the forest moon of Endor. So he's a rebel every way you slice it, every way you look at it. And he's everything you want from a rebel. He's cool and cocky, but he's fiercely loyal to his friends and to his beliefs.
Is it wrong that I see him as quite charming, General?
No.
Do you agree? Is that
I
all right?
Totally
yeah,
agree.
Because he really is. Just
hey, like Mark, he had it going on back in the day.
He probably has now, still.
Yeah, I mean, this is why Alden Ehrenreich, when he was cast in the Solo prequel movie, was on a hiding to nothing. He did a very good job, but how can you try and replicate one of the most charming characters played by one of the most charming actors of all time?
Tricky. Yep.
Very hard to do, and he did a damn good job. Now
I
will defend Solo against anyone who disparages it.
Okay.
But it was a tough thing to try and do.
I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed we're not getting another one. Because I really liked it. It was a good film.
And the way it ended, man.
I know.
That was set up for a sequel that was going to be amazing.
Yeah, the door was open. We were ready for it. We all bloody loved it, didn't we?
The thing with the new Disney Plus streaming service, it's going to have a lot of Disney properties in the way of TV shows. I think we might still get it. We might still get some format of it, but in a TV version.
Oh, and they gave us Darth Maul, man. I was just like, at that point, I remember getting an erection thinking, I want to do something with this. And I never got to. So
it's like, you had a tent in your trousers, like, just... I didn't really know where to look, if I'm honest.
No,
but yes, that was the one I knew you were going to have. And I thought you were going to try and shoehorn it somehow into talking about Blade Runner. Because obviously it's the same actor that plays the leading part. I thought he was going to try and get it in that way.
We got two more choices.
Oh, shit. Yeah, great choice. I'm going to go with one not so obvious and not so iconic. Happy Gilmore.
I've got it too.
Have you really?
Yes.
I very nearly picked it. It probably would have been my number four.
The fact that he plays golf with a hockey stick is instantly rebellious in every kind of way. He wears a flannel shirt and sweatpants when you go and play golf, you need to look smart. Mm-hmm. You need to respect the rules of the course, but he doesn't give a shit. I absolutely love him. He doesn't care. His anger and his outbursts while he's playing is some of the funniest scenes that Adam Sandler's ever done.
Yes.
And I'm not going to say at this point that it's the last good role, because I'll have people on Twitter going, you forgot this, you forgot that. But it's the last one that I remember where I laughed all the way through and enjoyed him being on screen. Now when he's doing his 8 or 9 Netflix films a year, I'm bored of him.
Yes.
I have no interest when a new film comes out. I just skip past it now. I'm just, oh, he's got another one. That's another one I've never heard of and I'll never watch.
Mm-hmm.
But this was when he was... at one of his strongest points. I absolutely love him. He never abides by the rules, but he has got a heart and he's doing it all for his grandma. So he's got reasons to be like this. But my God, those scenes were tap, 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 tap. Just tap it.
Tap, 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 tap.
And the outbursts. You've got to admit, this is one of the best films he's done.
I love when he hits a good shot and then he starts riding the stick like a horse.
It's so good.
And don't forget, his rebellion really soars when he's challenging Shooter McGavin.
Shooter,
of course, is the good boy of golf. He's the golden boy. He's the one that wins. He's got the green jackets. He's prim. He's poised. He's proper. And Happy comes in like a wrecking ball, just like a Miley Cyrus track. He doesn't care. And he will do anything he can to prove that the underdog is always the winner at heart. Mm-hmm. I love this film. It's so much fun. So much fun.
It's absolutely amazing. Just, it's so quotable.
Yeah. Like Bob Barker, too.
Bob Barker,
the price is wrong, bitch.
I love Happy getting angry because the putt didn't go in. He's down there with his face right next to it going, that's your home! Get in your home!
We'll never see him do another good film like this.
Probably not.
Never.
Shame.
He has more success these days from his dramatic roles than his comedic ones.
Yeah.
He's a very good actor.
Yeah.
He's just not used properly a lot of the time.
Shame.
Aww.
Okay. It's back to you, Ben.
I think you'll like this one, Mark. I'm going for Officer Mahoney, played by Steve Guttenberg in the Police Academy film series.
Yes! What a choice.
He's a prankster and a womanizer, and he only joins the Police Academy as an alternative to going to jail, and he only sticks with it because he falls for Kim Cattrall's character. But whilst he's there, he decides to make the best of it, not only by dedicating himself to the law, but by being as disruptive as he possibly can be. So over the course of the films, he does things like tricking rival cadets into attending gay bars filled with leather daddies. And that music is
so good.
Oh, it's so good.
The Blue Oyster Bar.
Blue Oyster
it?
Bar, yeah, that's correct.
I heard,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah, you know.
Shit. That one
much.
We went to.
He also hires a hooker to give the commandant a surprise blowjob whilst he's giving a speech.
That's amazing.
And then there's the I think it's in the second one where he replaces the commanding officer's shampoo with glue so
that's
he gets
amazing.
His hands stick to his hair and so much more. But for all that he's a colossal pain to the higher ups, he's also brave and smart and loyal, and we can't help but love him. Thanks in large part to Guttenberg's typically charming performance, because he was one of the biggest stars of the 80s. There was a period there from about 1984 to 1987 when he was in Police Academy, Cocoon, Three Men and a Baby. Oh. He was the biggest comedy star on earth.
Yep.
Because he was so goddamn charming and so funny, and every man, you could see yourself in him. You know, he reflected back at us. Don't pull that face, Mark.
Mark could.
Yeah.
You forgot Short Circuit as well.
On purpose.
That's a good film. It's a good film.
But over the course of the films, over the course of the Police Academy series, he actually starts to take his job seriously, and he starts to care about becoming a cop, and he actually becomes quite a good one.
Yeah.
So he is a rebel, but he starts to fall in line along the way. Now, if you want to know more about Steve Guttenberg's career, where could you do that, Mark?
I'm not going to use this podcast to plug another
you
one.
Always do. Go on.
He's on Mark and Me there this week at the moment, which is doing very well. And he hasn't actually done a podcast ever before.
Is that right?
It's his first interview in over 4 years.
Wow. Oh.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And when Ben said there about being in Guttenberg, well, that's what I had to do to get him on the podcast.
Hanging off the back of him. Easy.
But Police Academy is one of those films I grew up with my dad, and I think my mum wouldn't have been cool with me watching it, because there's quite some saucy jokes in there.
Oh, a lot, yeah.
And it's a bit saucy. They are.
He's a naughty one. It is. Saucy Jack.
But it's true, isn't it? You're like, when I was only about 8 or 9 when they came out, but I didn't actually ever get bored of them. And all those characters like Mr. Zed and Hightower and all these, they were really good characters.
Yeah.
I really did enjoy it back then. But watching them now, because they've got to 6, 7 now, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Mission to Moscow.
That's the one.
It's gone downhill.
Yeah. But the first 2 or 3 are genuinely very good.
Fantastic.
I used to love Tackleberry, and he's just an array of weapons. He was great.
Michael Winslow as well, doing all the impressions.
To hear more about Michael Winslow.
He's also on an old episode. But those two are great characters, like genuinely hilarious. And he does all those impressions, those voices he actually does. And I was always walking in the playground going, you've heard me on here do a lot of the impressions.
You're like Michael Winslow's stuntman.
They call me the White Winslow.
Oh my God!
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? That's what I get known as. But
Jesus Christ.
There we go.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, please. We should. My final choice is Ferris from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Of course.
Of course it's going to be. He skips school. He doesn't look like a rebel, does he? Let's be honest about it. He's a very nice, clean-cut kind of guy. But he turns his principal into a madman. He steals a car, which is a Ferrari as well, so it's worth quite a lot of money. But not going to school, I think, makes you a rebel instantly.
Yeah.
And any excuse I can get an 80s John Hughes classic into the podcast, I will use at any chance. But Ferris Bueller, for me, one of the most iconic 80s films.
Yep.
John Hughes, we talked about before when we've done stuff like Uncle Buck, we were discussing recently. He has heart in his films. He creates characters. He gives them all screen time, especially when we look at stuff like The Breakfast Club. Each and every character in that film, 5 main characters, you know them all.
Yeah.
And it's only an hour and a half film. He gives them time to develop with characters you're going to remember forever. And Ferris Bueller was the kid when I watched him at school thinking, I want to take a day off school, I want to call in sick, and I want to have the best day of my life with my 2 best mates. And if we reenacted it now, it'd be you two. We'd steal a car, we'd go out, we'd drink ciders.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
don't drink and drive.
We'd eat Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
We would go to McDonald's and get McFlurries.
Yes.
We would have more ciders.
What's happening
just
right
trying
now?
To plug some stuff that we might get to free.
Why are we going to an 8-year-old's birthday party?
Jelly and ice cream.
Hundreds and thousands.
Party bag afterwards.
But come on, guys. Ferris Bueller, what a great iconic character.
Yes,
totally.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He's just awesome, and I absolutely love the film. And it's one of those ones that I never get bored of watching either.
Mm-hmm.
It's a classic. That's what John Hughes does. He gives you films that you can watch, your parents can watch. If you had kids, you could watch them with it, and everyone loves them.
They never get old.
No.
I mean, some of the jokes wouldn't fly these days in a lot of his films, admittedly.
Yeah.
But the humour never gets old.
Yeah, he makes classics for a reason.
Yeah,
like we do.
Right.
Yeah.
I reckon
Correct.
You could listen to these episodes in 20 years and they'll sound as shit as they do now.
We are. That is true. We are the John Hughes of podcasting.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Come on then, Gemma, finish us off.
Okay, well, with that promise in mind, I've also gone for a John Hughes film.
Ooh.
My third rebel is John Bender from The Breakfast Club.
Beautiful.
Brought to life by Judd Nelson. And he was considered the ultimate poster boy for rebels in the 1980s, especially in the Reagan era. He embodied the word by dressing in a red flannel shirt, worn out boots, and of course the 80s staple, which was an oversized coat and some fingerless gloves. But it was, aside from that, it was also the state of mind that he kind of possessed. It was the way how he sat on the chair, like really not giving two frigs of a question and no interest in what the matter of hand is in detention. He knows he's a bad boy, so therefore he plays up to it. And the kids in the detention hall also know this. But deep down, he's a troubled soul.
Yeah.
Aww. You know, he's got a bit of an abusive dad. He's not very nice. His mum isn't really supportive. So therefore, we know that Bender comes from a dysfunctional home. And he's born from this rebellion. But my God, he looks cool with it.
Yeah.
He is, you know, he can strike a match with his teeth. I mean, who else can do that?
That is awesome.
But he feels like, you know, there is a possibility of change because rebellion... Actually, all the kids in the Breakfast Club are rebels in their own right, when you think about it. So therefore, he identifies with this group of misfits, and he's going to do something about it. He's going to shove his fists in the air, freeze, and have Simple Minds playing over it.
It's one of the most iconic shots in film, isn't it? That of him frozen on the football field.
Absolutely awesome. Yeah. He looks cool as well. Like if
he does.
You, as a girl, do you fancy him? He looks cool as fuck.
Mark.
Yeah.
He would get it, full stop.
There we go. But his hair's all long. I think he just looks ace. If I was wanted to be a kid at school, that's how I want to look.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's slight, you know that he'd probably throw you around like a rag doll.
Jesus, this is getting
this
raunchy.
Is too much.
Is
it too saucy?
Yes. I don't like this, actually. Ben, can you take over? Because I don't want to talk about rudeness.
Just let's, going off that topic then, Mark, you talked about that's what you'd like to have looked like when you were at school. Let me have a guess about you. I reckon when you were at school, you had that typical haircut that every white kid had in the 90s of the kind of curtains.
Of course.
Did you?
Like a Backstreet Boy.
Yeah. Yes, exactly that.
Literally every white kid in the 90s had that. Oh,
yeah. And then the number two round the sides, and they're slightly undercut, so when your curtains are hanging down, it's got that kind of mushroomy bit at the back. We all had that. It looks really good. What we'll do at one point, we'll bring photos of ourselves.
Oh my
kids.
God, I don't know if I'm ready.
Keep them away from Watkins. Bingo, strike number one.
Yeah.
There we go. Come on then, Ben, now you finish us off.
I'm going to finish you all off with... Harry Callahan, played by Clint Eastwood in the Dirty Harry film series.
Incredible.
He's one of the first movie anti-heroes brought to life with swaggering, no bullshit performance of Clint Eastwood. He's a cop that will bend the law to uphold it and shoot first and ask questions later. And of course, that all seems cliche now, but it's only because Harry Callahan pioneered those kind of cliches. He's the archetypal loose cannon playing by his own rules. I don't know how you get more rebellious than that.
Mm-mm.
Think of the scene in Dirty Harry where he shoots and tortures the serial killer even after the serial killer has surrendered. Or the scene in Sudden Impact where he lets a murderer go free once he finds out that she's a rape victim killing the person who raped her. You know, plays by his own rule book, this guy.
Does not give two shits.
No. But the problem here is misdemeanors often end up with him getting reprimanded or reassigned or demoted, but he doesn't give a shit because he has a single-minded sense of justice and will pursue it whatever the cost. And it's a part that only Clint Eastwood could play. I pray to Satan that this never gets remade because only Clint could be Dirty Harry. In that era, there was no one manlier. There was no bigger swinging dick than Clint Eastwood.
No.
And no one could do that role these days.
He had big dick energy.
He did?
Yes.
If such a thing exists.
Yes.
He had it.
If anyone has it, he's got the biggest amount. But yeah, they won't ever remake that. They can't. There's some films that are untouchable, and I think that's one that needs to stay on that page of do not go anywhere near it.
Yeah.
What was a film recently? Well, I don't know if it was that recent, but Bruce Willis, it was a remake, and it was only about a year or two old.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Death Wish.
Yes.
Death Wish.
Yeah.
I thought that was on the list. I thought that was safe. I thought no one's ever going to touch this. So actually, to be fair, nothing's sacred anymore.
Basically, everything is fair game.
Yeah. So imagine Nicolas Cage is Dirty Harry.
Do you know what?
I'd like that.
That I wouldn't mind, but it wouldn't be him. It'd be that prick from Baby Driver.
Oh, Ansel Elgort.
Yeah. Ansel Elgort
is
Dirty Harry. I despise him. He's got the most punchable face. I would punch him until every bone in my hand broke, and I'd be happy about that. I'd be delighted.
Just throwing a limp wrist at him once you're finished.
Him or Jared Leto to have the most mashed up face.
Thing is, I've grown to love Jared Leto, of course, because he's so goddamn good in Blade Runner 2049. So my hatred of Leto has dissipated somewhat, but Ansel Elgort will never get off my list.
There we go. Awesome choice. Awesome films. We've not had that much crossover. One.
Yeah.
I thought there'd be more than that. Yeah. But yes. I think it's time we go to social media because there was a hell of a lot, wasn't there?
Hell of a lot indeed. So we're going to head over to Twitter first. B Garner at CineB2 said, Luke from Cool Hand Luke.
Good choice.
Never seen that film.
Great film.
Oh, yeah. I know. The old eggs scene. Blech.
Yeah.
Bonnie and Clyde from Bonnie and Clyde.
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And of course, Ferris Bueller from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Then we had Dr. Sinister at Dread Sinister said, Rutger Hauer from The Hitcher.
Oh, good film.
Ren McCormick from Footloose.
Yeah,
classic.
All he wanted to do was dance, damn it. All he wanted to do. And Jesus Christ from The Robe. An old film.
I thought you were about to say Jesus Christ from Passion of Christ. I was like, that wasn't a rebel.
No, Jesus Christ.
He did not conform against them, did he? Whoops. Alex Orlando at Alex Orlando said, Neville Longbottom from Harry Potter.
What?
Mulan.
Did he rebel?
I don't know. I've not seen them.
Probably.
I've never seen those films.
I've seen them, but I can't remember if you know. I'll take the word for it.
Shame.
Also said Mulan from Mulan and Leia from Star Wars.
Yeah.
The Ginch at That Ginch Lad said Francoise Dillinger from Youth in Revolt.
I nearly had that one.
That's
as well.
A great choice. Yeah.
Grandpa Edwin from Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah. Oh, I love him. Fuck a lot of women. Good advice.
Yeah. And Mark Hunter from Pump Up the Volume or DJ Happy Hard On.
Not familiar.
Not sure.
Christian Slater.
Ah.
Never mind. Facebook. We've got Simon Armstrong said Lieutenant Aldo Raine from Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, good shout.
Very good.
Adrian Cronor?
I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah. Adrian from Good Morning Vietnam.
Right.
Yes.
And agrees with you, Ben Harry from Dirty Harry.
Yes.
And then finally, Rich Johnson said Terry Malloy on the waterfront. So Marlon Brando.
Yeah, very good.
Never seen that.
You've got to. It's a great film. Not gangster happen. Film. Nah. Never mind.
There's so many on the list, that's not anywhere near the top.
Okie dokie. Arthur Seaton from Saturday Night and Sunday Morning. Again, another old film. Albert Finney.
Oh,
long, long time ago. And finally, Mia from Fish Tank. That is brutal.
Fish Tank?
Is that the film with Fassbender?
It is indeed, yeah. Really, really good.
He's picked some good choices.
He has, but thank you everybody and keep them coming in.
So, on the next episode, it's my topic, and it's going to be quite a big one where we've got a lot to choose from.
Okay.
Hell of a lot. It's going to be our top three biopics.
Ooh!
We've been to see Lords of Chaos, the film that tells the story of Norwegian black metal band Mayhem and the amount of different publicity stunts the band pull off to try and get their names on the map. But the lines between show and reality begin to blur. As always, guys, we are going to spoil this film. You know us by now. You've been listening to us for nearly 4.5 years. We're going to tell you what happens. We're going to tell you any plot holes. We're going to tell you any major parts of the film. So don't moan. Stop and bloody pause the podcast, go and watch the film and come back and we'll be waiting for you with a nice cold bottle of Brothers Cider.
Good luck.
Right then, guys. You know this. Me and Ben are big fans of metal.
Gemma,
you're not so much.
I mean, I've heard a few bops and ditties in my time.
And I have no idea right now what you guys are going to think to this film. It's getting a lot of positive reviews and a lot of very negative. I've not met anyone that's on the fence at the moment. Everyone either loves it or hates it. So find out now if... what side of the fence we're on. Ben, I'm going to throw this straight to you, dude. What did you think of Lords of Chaos?
I thought it was brutal, often very gripping, but ultimately quite shallow. But I did enjoy it.
Okay, and Gemma?
I'm on the fence.
Oh, there's always one.
Because it's an interesting film for the first half. It runs out of steam in 2/3 and delivers a very shocking finale. I think the problem is tone in this film. I think it loses its way a bit, but it's all right.
I really, really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to expect at all because I hadn't read about it. Once I got past Culkin's Wiser impression at the very start, once I was able to get over that, I felt it was fantastic and it really opened my eyes up. I don't care if the facts are right and if it hasn't got these accurate parts, I enjoyed it for what it was, and it was very different to the sort of films we've been reviewing. So when I came out of the cinema, I was actually buzzing. I thought, wicked, yeah. That was really decent.
I think one of the things we need to make clear to the listeners who aren't familiar with the film, because the intro that Mark gave that he stole from IMDb or whatever, didn't make it clear that this is a true story, that Mayhem were a genuine black... Well, they're still a band, actually. They're still going, but they're a Norwegian black metal band that kind of pioneered the concept of Norwegian black metal. And it's the true story of how the band came into force, how they went to these extreme lengths, and how the bass player, Vagva Kernes, ended up murdering the lead guitar player, Euronymous.
Yes.
We failed to mention that in the intro.
Yes. I reckon Bender's my intro, so now I'll give him an extra bottle
of beer. How is that, Dad?
Yeah. Well, now we know the intro. Yeah. Ben, what did you think of the film?
I think the film goes to great lengths to show all the fucked up shit that these guys did, but it doesn't spend enough time trying to explain or understand why they did them.
Yeah.
It's all very surface level to me, and it's too simple to write off their actions as a bunch of dumb kids wanting to seem extreme. I don't think it delves enough into their psyche.
Mm-hmm. At one point, it tries to market itself as a black comedy. Another time, it markets itself as a real serious, gritty drama. Another point, it, like Ben said, it focuses on sort of the adolescence of these guys. Mm-hmm. I didn't really feel settled throughout the whole film. There's some real, like, whoa, what on earth did I just see? That was really savage kind of moments. But I think the problem I had with this film is it didn't feel comfortable throughout. It wasn't as fluid as what I hoped it would have been. But I will say that it had a very art house feel, but it didn't come across as too pretentious. And that is very, very rare to see a film of this kind of nature.
Yeah, it had that kind of feel at times, like Hereditary, where it's like, it's done quite well. There's enough budget to make it look quite special, but you keep using the word gritty, and that's what it was. It's very gritty. But you keep mentioning at the moment as well these scenes that stuck with you. It wasn't an easy watch, and for me, first one where I was like, oh my lord, is when the band are doing one of their first gigs and the singer decides to slash open his hands and his arms and his wrists and most of his bloody elbows and everything, and it's gross. It's not like in some films you see people commit suicide or try and harm themselves in kind of over the top way, like sort of Kill Bill would just be spraying blood. It's too real. Yes. And you see these bits of flesh open up and the big gashes in their arms and the blood and everything. I'd be honest, I didn't like it. It was too much for me. No. I was like, I can't do this.
It was very, very hard to watch, because after he's on stage self-harming effectively, he then goes back to their house and kills himself.
Oh.
And the suicide scene, again, it's so unflinching. The camera never moves. You see him dig the blade deep into his skin, and you see the skin penetrate and the blood start to flow. And then he slices his own throat, and you see the same thing again.
It's gross.
And then, you know, just to put the cherry on the cake,
why not?
He gets a shotgun and blows off his head off.
Yeah.
And the camera never looks away. You're complicit in this. You're watching this happen. It's one of the most unflinching and brutal pieces of mayhem, quite literally, that I've ever seen on film. It's extraordinary.
And when his head's blown off, again, practical effects, you know, I keep banging every week about them, but how good does it look?
Oh,
he's
phenomenal.
Sitting there, his head's all caved off. There's bits of his face that are all flown across the room. That's how it would look if you shot yourself in the head.
Yeah.
But it's worth noting that when Euronymous comes into the forefront and inspects Dead's dead body, he looks at it with curiosity and fascination. There's no breaking down, there's no wailing, there's no tears. He is completely fascinated by what's in front of him and almost uses that as kind of the seed of what is going to be Mayhem's ploy to be, you know, in the forefront of people's minds. And it's a shocking performance from Rory Culkin as Euronymous.
It is.
Yeah.
We'll come to the performances in more detail in a minute, but just sticking with the shocking scenes, the other one for me is Euronymous's death scene.
Yes.
So when Varg starts stabbing him, and he's stabbing him in the apartment, and then Euronymous tries to escape into the hallway, and he's going down the stairwell, and he's just following him and stabbing him. And how long is that scene?
Too long.
It's got to be.
Minutes?
Yeah, it's got to be something like that. I've lost count of how many times he stabbed him, but it was dozens and dozens. And again, the camera doesn't look away. You're watching this whole thing happen. Fucking brutal,
even
man.
The sound effects. You get that kind of that squelchy noise.
Yeah.
But I think the real, if there was sort of the most savage point of that scene, when that knife just goes straight into his head, and Varg is trying to get the knife out of his head, and it feels too authentic. It feels like you've just witnessed a murder on screen. It's like a snuff film.
Also that scene when he met the gay guy in the park and then decided to stab him because he kind of showed interest in him and started touching him up. Again, not just one little stab, not a little one in the arm, just completely stabbing him. And like Ben said, the camera doesn't pull away, and you want it to.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm sick of seeing this now.
And you horrible. Even get the feel of how much pain that poor chap must have been in, because he's getting a knife penetrated into his stomach and then in his sides. It's
definitely
so
not the penetration he wanted.
No.
Brilliant.
There we go.
Nailed it again.
Horrible. Well, he didn't.
Oh but dear. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
It's distressing.
That's how a knife would actually be if you got stabbed.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of films we see, it's one stab and they're dead. That's what you always see in a film. Oh, look, he's dead. The way that he cuts his throat, the way he cuts his arms, his hands, everything is real. And like you said, that scene on the stairs, it probably is 10 minutes long, I reckon.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just wanted it to end. I hated it.
See, I kind of loved it, but you know, it was very, very hard to watch, but I thought it was a brilliant directorial decision by Jonas Ackland, who is known more for his music videos. You know, this is a guy who's done music videos for Metallica. He did Smack My Bitch Up for The Prodigy.
Yeah.
He's done videos for Queens of the Stone Age. He's also done pop videos for the likes of Madonna, Beyonce, and Lady Gaga. But the best thing about Jonas Ackland directing this film is he also used to be in a black metal band. He used to be the drummer for a band called Bathory. So he knows this scene about as well as anyone could. And I like the fact that it's unflinching, because he may not have known these guys personally, but the fact that he was around this kind of these toxic kind of characters, he doesn't want us to look away.
No.
He wants us to look at it and say, this was fucking real, man. This happened.
Yeah.
So you're going to need to watch it to understand how bloody awful it was. So I really, really appreciate the direction.
It. Yeah, and like, look, we're talking about it still, so it's worked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, even the feel of it too can sometimes come across as very cold and clinical, but I think that was a reflection of the people, the characters that we were getting to know throughout the film.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the suicide, then it gets used as, the first thing, like, if Ben had killed himself and I walk in the flat, the last thing I'm going to do is get a camera, start taking photos, and, I'll put that on Twitter for our next episode. You know, it's all about how can I use this to get the band to the next level.
Yeah, they genuinely did use the photo of him with his head blown off as the cover of their next EP.
Christ.
And he genuinely did take bits of his skull and make necklaces out of them.
Oh my God.
This is how Jesus messed Christ. Up these dudes were.
Seriously.
Shall we talk about some of the characters specifically and some of the actors?
Yes.
Then? Because Varg is such an unspeakable piece of shit in real life, I love how the film paints him initially as this weaselly wannabe poser boy.
Yeah.
Whether that's accurate or not, I love it, because he's such a knobhead in real life. I love the fact of him sitting at home watching this and thinking, oh, they've screwed me over here. He hates it, the real Varg, because since he got released from prison for the murder, he's now a right-wing Nazi blogger and YouTuber.
Oh, dear.
And apparently he hated the fact that the person who played Varg in the film was Emery Cohen, a Jew.
Oh, then I love
it. Neo-Nazis aren't so keen on Jewish people playing them in films. So I've heard. So yeah, he was furious. Good.
I loved his performance, though. I love the fact that we saw those two sides, and it was kind of like a bit like Anakin Skywalker to Darth Vader. We saw this nice guy. His mom was dropping him off, giving him the money to record the album. Real kind. He was a fake, wasn't he?
He really
was. But then we got the opposite. Like the moment we saw him have a strip around, and he was like, "Get your clothes off now."
Yeah.
Do you not understand what I just said? Why are you still wearing your clothes? You thought, fucking hell, he's turning a bit evil here. By the end, he doesn't give two shits.
Yeah.
I thought he was chilling throughout. He had that kind of... He had a slight light in his eyes when we first meet him, but as the story goes on, that light is completely dimmed, and there's just a cold, harsh killer in the making who doesn't have any regard for anybody else other than his best interests at heart. And it's also worth noting that Emery Cohen is probably best known for things like The OA.
Yeah, is he in that?
Yeah, Homer.
I don't know.
He should go far. I really like the guy. I thought he was a great performance.
I think he was in the film Brooklyn with Saoirse Ronan, wasn't he? He was good in that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fair play to the guy.
I don't know. I liked him in parts, but I think he struggles to emote with his eyes. He has really heavy-lidded eyes. He always just looks stoned to me.
Perhaps he was.
Quite possibly.
Maybe.
Do you think he looked like a bit like a young meatloaf?
He did a bit, and
yeah.
I kind of think it was not the best casting, picking a guy who's, you know, got a little bit of weight on him, a little bit of meat on him.
A little bit of timber.
Yeah, because, you know, these kind of Norwegian black metalers are all deathly, sickly thin, aren't they? And Varg was, if you look at pictures of him. So picking Emery Cohen, who's a bit of a chubster, it didn't look quite right, and he did look like a young meatloaf.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I did love the relationship between him and Culkin, though. They're kind of almost like brothers to begin with, but then this rivalry, this simmering tension brewing between them. And I thought Rory Culkin was absolutely brilliant as Euronymous. He's a self-deluded guy who always wants to be the leader, but he ends up just taking credit for other people's actions. I thought he was excellent.
I thought he had a real sort of... He's got real striking features about him too. Mm-hmm. So mix that with sort of dark, long black hair and sort of the white skin. He had a real presence about him. And I thought every scene that he was in, my focus was completely on him. I really believed that the authority that Euronymous had was conveyed perfectly by him. I really enjoyed him in this.
For me, he always felt like a boy playing at being a man, which I think is true of all the characters.
Yeah.
Really.
But I also thought that not just his on-screen stuff, his actual narration throughout was captivating. I loved his voice. He was a bit like, again, like Ben said, a bit stoned, I felt. He was a bit like, yeah, man, and then we went to this bar and we didn't know what we were doing. And he was always very whatever. But I always found myself, like you said, just glued to him. I think he's absolutely awesome as an actor. I really do. He's very underrated. Everyone talks about his brothers, but he was phenomenal.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, yeah. The Culkin family, it's amazing to think that Macaulay was the first one and now we don't really see much of him.
No.
Yeah. But now the other boys are doing really well.
It's awesome.
Yeah, they are fantastic. Yeah. The guy who plays Faust, the one who stabbed the gay guy to death, you could tell he was a Skarsgård because he looks exactly like his brother Bill, who plays Pennywise in it.
Yes.
So my first question was, are they related?
Yes.
Because it's a very distinctive surname. And now you've said it, it's a mini-me.
Yeah.
But he's good.
Just like, he's very good. Yeah, I liked him.
What is it about these families and brothers doing well? Yeah. It's scary.
You've got Hemsworth brothers too. They're very good.
Yeah, they're all pretty good. But this Skarsgård guy was awesome. And again, hopefully, he won't get overshadowed by his brother being Pennywise and stuff like this. And he'll get a good chance.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah. The only character that didn't work for me much was the character of Anne Marit. So she was the girlfriend of Euronymous. She doesn't exist in real life. It was a character that was made for the film. It was a bit of Hollywood bullshit for me, where they felt like he had to have a girlfriend and she had to sort of come between the band a little bit. And it was unnecessary. I understand the idea of artistic license, but it seemed pointless to me.
I think so, because even they kind of disregard women in this whole world that they're in. Mm. And I do believe she was just in there for maybe a presence of a female, perhaps, maybe a bit of titillation. And Sky Ferreira, is that her name?
Apparently.
She's a singer.
Oh.
She's not really known for her acting ability. She was Baby Driver's mum at the end of Baby Driver.
Oh, Christ.
But yeah, I didn't really feel there was much gravitas.
Well, nothing, I don't remember much about the performances.
There you
go. Shows how much I cared.
Mm.
But the what do you think about the actual band performance? Because I believe they were in a band. Sometimes you watch these films, you think, they've never picked up an instrument in their life.
Yeah.
I was believing it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because I can't play guitar. I don't have the dexterity, but you play guitar very well.
I try.
So when you're looking at Rory Culkin on stage, does he look like he's actually playing the notes correctly?
Yeah, he does. His hands aren't just all over the 12th fret when it should be down the bottom. But they look like they're rocking out, having a really good time. And at times I thought, is that the real band footage? Because it looks real.
Mm.
And I thought all of it looked great. These dirty, dingy venues. Look wicked, man. I loved it.
Yeah. A very sort of cold and dark atmosphere permeates the whole film. You watch it and you think, I never want to go to Norway. And Norway, by all accounts, is a bloody lovely place.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't think that. But watching that film, like, nah.
Yeah. I reckon we've pretty much talked everything. Considering we weren't that fond of it, you said at the start, this is quite a long review for us. So should we call it a day and score it?
Yeah.
Come on then, Ben, you go first.
As I say, I enjoyed it. A little bit shallow, a little bit surface level, but good performances and some stunning imagery. I'll give it a solid 7.
That's great. Gemma?
Yeah, I think a 7 out of 10 is very fair. I don't think I'm going to be watching this anytime soon, but for me it's a 7.
For me it's slightly higher, I think it's an 8. I thought the cinematography and the directing, some of it was very brave, it was really good, and I really enjoyed it, but it's probably an 8 from me.
Okay.
But I think overall, Lords of Chaos still gets a skip to the end, 7 out of 10. It's competition time! That's the most energy and effort I've put into anything, I think,
Your
in this
forehead
podcast.
Is bright red right now.
That's the cider.
And you got a bit scouse towards the end.
It's time!
So, if you hadn't listened to us before, that amazing intro happens most times to tell us that it's the time for competition time, where we give away some amazing prizes, but also announce the winners from our previous competitions. Hopefully you all tuned in to our last episode, which was Captain Marvel, where we, I think, gave away our best prizes yet.
Ooh.
So we'll have to try and top it at some point. But on that was our rewatch of The Lost Boys. So, Last Exit came along and gave us a Frogs comic t-shirt, and we said, Edgar Frog is played by who? Ben?
Corey Feldman, of course.
Is the one and only. Could you imagine anyone else could be cast?
Definitely not.
Heck never. No.
That's what I said about all these films, like Corbin Nash.
License to Drive.
License to, you just couldn't ever replace him. They'll never remake a film with him in.
No.
True.
And if they do, he'll star. Anyway, the winner of this competition, is at jholland15, who'll be getting that in the post. Also, our master bait was over Terry Gilliam.
Yep.
And they gave us a t-shirt for Brazil. And we said, who directed Brazil?
Oh, I wonder.
So that's quite a tough one. Gemma?
I'm going to pluck this out of thin air. Terry Gilliam.
It's absolutely true.
Yes!
And Rupert Denholm Hall will be getting that. Also, he has said it's his wife's birthday as the day this episode comes out.
Oh, there we go.
So I think that's a double win. You've won a t-shirt and happy birthday. Pretty good. Funko came along and gave us a full set of Lost Boys pops. That's ones I want. You know, the noodles.
Yeah.
What's that character's name?
David.
What's the other one called? I forgot.
Michael.
And the question we put out there was, who directed Lost Boys? Ben?
Joel Schumacher.
It's true. And Aaron Lenton on email will be getting those in the
email?
Post.
Email?
Yes. One of, email?
Email?
I remember that.
So shocked.
Oh, this was one of the biggest prizes. The response was insane. A Brie Larson signed Captain Marvel Funko Pop, which is huge.
Very cool.
Nick Fury is played by which actor?
Samuel L. Jackson.
It's true. And Jodie Evans on Facebook will be getting that. And I want to see pictures of that.
Yes.
And if that's on eBay, anyone's, like, if you named Jay Evans or something like that on eBay, we're going to come and we're going to find you.
Yeah.
And we're going to tell you off.
We're going to write a strongly worded letter.
There were so many compa twats online for that,
compa
weren't
they?
I want this, but I don't know how to enter. Listen to the episode.
Yeah.
Listen to the damn episode, then you'd know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
We don't want people like you listening.
Scum. Something
yes.
Scum.
There we go. Please listen. We also like recognising the people that leave us an iTunes rating. We get them, you see them, we post them.
Yep.
We really do appreciate it. And we've got an It Pennywise Fi exclusive. And this is the review we had. If iTunes could go to 11, you would surely get a 11 out of 5. I like that. I like it. It doesn't work mathematically.
I mean,
and here's our maths expert. Here's our maths expert, Gemma.
Hi.
People have been loving your maths online.
Thank you.
Incredible.
Gemma Vorderman over here.
Yes. Chevelle77 will be getting that in the post. But it's time to give away some awesome new prizes. But let's start by giving ourselves some.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
So last expert have given me this brand new, look at this, the Thing t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Gemma, for you.
Oh, sexy.
Is that a Back to the Future?
It bloody is.
That's sexy. And for you, Ben?
Oh, I've got Blade Runner. There's a surprise.
What a surprise.
No. That's ace, though, isn't it? Look at that. The Replicant Freedom Movement.
Really cool. I think you've let us down here. You should have had The Shining, and we've all got some of our favourite films.
This is actually Blade Runner 2049.
Oh,
switching it up.
So coming up soon, we'll have a rewatch of Aliens. The last exit have given us a cap, which is really smart. Look at this. How cool
Ooh.
Is that?
Ooh, cool.
So what should we say? What year was Alien released?
Yeah.
A bit different. And this is what Ben just mentioned. We're going to be giving away one of the Replicant Freedom t-shirts just like that.
Ooh.
Because on our movie Masturbate, we're going to be talking about Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve.
Let's say Harrison Ford plays which character in the Blade Runner films?
Do you think
pretty easy.
Do you think Villeneuve and Frank Darabont are
yes, hopefully. Funko have gone all out here for Alien. Absolutely insane. They've given us an Alien Queen large pop, biggest size one, a Xenomorph mini keyring, an Alien pop.
I love the way he says keyring.
Mini keyring.
Gearing.
Xenomorph 40th version anniversary pop, which is to celebrate the new 40th anniversary. Can you believe it's 40 years old?
40 years old.
But a Ripley in Space pop, which is only exclusive to them, and a vinyl 2-pack to celebrate this. It's mad. Let's make
vinyl
it really
two-pack
simple.
Vinyl 2-pack
Yes.
Oh my God, I would love to see him cap in like the alien's ass.
Well, can you imagine that?
Yeah, take that, motherfucker.
That would be... That would almost be as good as Snake out of Compton. Yeah. You know what I mean? Who directed Alien to win all that? That's okay. Pretty good. Richard Sounds are giving us some Lindy BNX60 wireless headphones. Now, when I put the last question online, people are going, and fighting between themselves. Literally fighting between themselves. When I put, what was the worst album ever made?
Oh, really?
You can't say that about Ed Sheeran. You can't say that about Corey. And people were saying Corey, which upset me.
Oh, dear.
So we're just going to switch it round. Your favourite album of all time. Let's have positivity. You know what I mean? Then people can't be moaning and arguing. You know what I mean? Doesn't work for me. This is a big, big prize. An Us movie signed poster Ooh. By the director, Jordan Peele, by Winston Duke,
yes.
and the famous actress herself.
Go on,
I'm
try it.
Go on, do it.
Lupita.
No. Lupita.
No.
L.
See, I thought he'd struggle with the second name, Gemma.
I didn't
think he'd balls up the first
I haven't got that. What's the first name?
I'll give you the first one. Lupita.
Ah, Lupita. That's like Blue Peter. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Remember for now on. Yes. Remember that it rhymes with Blue Peter.
I'll meet her one day. But I've got her. So, Blue Peter. shit. Nyong'o.
Well done.
Yeah?
Close enough.
Close enough.
So, Blue Peter Nyong'o. Signed by her.
Jesus.
This is a hell of a poster. Do you know what I mean? That is awesome. Let's say who directed the film. That's really good. Has anyone seen the film yet?
I haven't.
I have.
It's very, very good and nothing like the trailer. The trailer for me was a catfish.
Mm. Yeah. It's my film of the year so far.
Wow.
I think it's absolutely perfect. I think it's so original. It's a personal best by Lupita Nyong'o. I think Jordan Peele is a director that's worth getting excited about. I cannot wait to be rewatching this film again. I loved it.
I haven't seen it, but I've read all the reviews. So Peele seems he's two for two in his short directorial career. Mm.
Do you know what I'm getting really annoyed by? Everyone keeps saying Jordan Peele is the new Kubrick. No, Jordan Peele is the new Jordan Peele.
Amen to that.
Correct.
That's what it should be.
Yep. Uh-huh.
He's amazing. And I love that when he was doing his press stuff, he had the shirt from The Shining. It's amazing.
I love that in an interview on uprocks.com, he mentioned that there were several Corey Feldman Easter eggs in Us.
Yep.
He loves Corey as much as we do.
Yep.
I think he listens to us. Clearly. I'll be honest. So, all right, Jordan, how's it going? Thanks again for the poster. brilliant. And finally, I think iTunes, these people need some love. So all those pops I mentioned for the Alien quiz, we're going to give away a whole batch to someone that leaves us a 5-star iTunes review.
Oh,
nice.
So what should we do? Come back in 2 weeks and announce the winners as we always do?
Yes.
Stay tuned.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot of a director and we talk about our favourite film from that particular person. So on the last episode, we picked out Denis Villeneuve, 10 points.
Nice.
10 points if you don't speak French.
Well done.
He's done a good load of films in his old career. He's done some all right.
Not a very long career either, so
no.
He's got a lot to give.
It's a mark of a good director. So with that being said, Mark, I'm going to throw this over to you first. Denis Villeneuve, discuss.
Sicario.
Great choice.
Wow.
That's it.
Okay.
Job done. My turn. <Yeah. laughs>
Do I need to say much? Me and Ben went to see this twice at the cinema within about a week. That speaks volumes. We can't be asked to leave our houses usually. Uh-huh. So to go twice, and I don't think we even reviewed it, or did we? I can't remember.
No, Sicario 2.
We just went to see it.
Yeah.
This film, it's grit cast today, but it's one of the most gritty, intense thrillers I'd ever seen. And it wasn't really this film that was built up. There was no major trailers. I didn't know much about the director at the time. Yes, you've got the amazing cast of Emily Blunt, one of the best actresses on the planet. You've got Del Toro, an absolute awesome guy.
Yeah.
And the man himself, Brolin, who's everywhere at the moment. Those three as the leads. You're sold anyway. But my God, it's so tightly put together. It's so well edited. I'm on the edge of my seat the whole way through this film.
Mm-hmm.
We know all about the FBI. We know all the story about the FBI agent, the way that they go across these drug laws and the border in the US and Mexico. We know the story. It's quite simple. There's actually not that much, that's going to suddenly throw you off. But my God, the tension in this film is like nothing I've ever seen. The opening scene itself blows your mind.
Yeah.
Oh, with the house.
It's insane where they've got the bodies in the walls.
Yeah.
At that moment, I was like, what is going on here? This is unbelievable. The border crossing itself, literally my heart was racing the whole time. You've never seen anything like it. The way they just sat in a car, it's busy, they're stationary, but your heart is absolutely...
Yeah.
Like this.
Because you know some shit's going to go down.
Yeah, and the build-up, you think might only be a couple of minutes. It's probably about 8-10 minutes, but that's the longest 8-10 minutes of your life. It's so, so bad.
Yeah.
The night vision and the tunnel sequence is absolutely flawless. Entering Mexico itself, these bodies being hung up on the bridge with have been beheaded.
Yeah.
It's like you'd see where you get pigs in butchers, but it's humans. And that's a hello, welcome to Mexico. You're like, fucking hell.
Would you like a chop?
But my favourite scene of the whole film is the final dinner scene
with
the family.
Boy, oh
and
boy.
At that point, I was like, give this guy every Oscar, every award ever. You've got me. I'm coming back here with Ben in a few days. This is how you produce a film. You've got Deakins doing the cinematography. Them two together are a match made in heaven.
Yep.
It's absolutely fucking awesome. And even if you anticipate what's going to happen, it will throw you off a little bit. But from start to finish, you can't fault this film. You can't. It's absolutely fucking awesome. And the sequel's not great, but for this, it was amazing.
The first one is absolutely flawless. The scene that I love the most, it's not the showiest of scenes, but it's when Del Toro has gone over the border and he's kind of hijacked that car and he's in the back seat of the car making the guy drive him to that hacienda.
Yeah.
And it's dark. The roads are dark and you're just watching this car drive along the road for a good 5-10 minutes or something. And again, it's just pure tension because you know something bad is going to happen when they get to where they're going. It's flawless. And of course, we're talking about Villeneuve here in terms of the direction, but the writing by Taylor Sheridan is superb. It's one of the best scripts I've ever seen brought to life on screen.
It's absolutely amazing, isn't it?
Yeah,
the score too. Yep. You mentioned about how your heart's going boom, 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 boom. But when you listen to the background music, it's going boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Boom. And it's like a heartbeat, the viewer's heartbeat, just absolutely tense and anticipating exactly what's going to happen next, and nobody knows.
It is literally one of the best looking films as well. It's so good. Deakins is the man.
You think you got Mary Poppins and Thanos, like, you know, trying to foil a drug operation.
But some of the long shots as well of Mexico and stuff, all the long panned out shots, it is absolutely awesome. I fucking love this film.
Beautiful colour palette.
I can't think of another film in recent history that I had no preconceived expectations going into and my jaw just dropped.
Very true.
There'll be films, you know, maybe something like Infinity War. We know that's going to be good. You go in, your jaw drops, but you're expecting that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because Sicario came out of nowhere, came entirely out of left field, and it ended, and we just looked at each other, Mark, like, what the fuck?
I know.
That's why we went back a couple of days later, because our jaws were on the floor.
Yeah, and since, obviously, when it's come out, I bought the Blu-ray. Mm. I don't watch it as much as you think after I've bigged it up so much, but it's not a film I need to watch again and again, but I'll at least watch it every 6 months.
Well, this is it. You don't need to continuously watch something as soon as the credits roll in and it's back to the beginning. It's a treat. It's a visual treat. And when you know that a film is that good, it doesn't need to be on repeat.
Yep.
I'd probably say it's the best thriller in the last decade. There you go. Tell me a better one.
Yeah.
Think about it. It's that good.
It's phenomenal.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Ben, what's yours?
Well, from one Villeneuve masterpiece to another. I'm hugely obsessed with him at the minute, and I think he's quickly putting together an extraordinary resume, but for me, it has to be Blade Runner 2049.
It's mine too.
Good stuff. I'm the world's biggest Blade Runner fan. I think we've established this over 117 episodes. So I was incredibly excited for a sequel, but I was also kind of worried that the belated sequel wouldn't live up to the original. I shouldn't have worried. It's spectacular. It manages to pay homage to Ridley Scott's original, whilst also striking out on its own to create its own identity. So Villeneuve manages to recreate those famous overcrowded neon-lit streets of future Los Angeles. But he also brings in his own stuff, like the irradiated ruins of Los Angeles, those deep reds that we see, and also the misty, overcast protein farms where the replicants are hiding out. That's where we meet Dave Bautista's character,
Sapamore.
It just looks amazing on every level. The direction's flawless, but it wouldn't look half as good without, of course, Roger Deakins.
Sir Roger Deakins.
As Mark quite rightly said, those two together, you know, it's a match made in heaven. He's the greatest that ever lived for me, Roger Deakins. He is the best cinematographer of all time. He rightfully earned his first Oscar after 14 nominations for this film because it's so gorgeous and so richly detailed. And props have to go to the casting as well. I mentioned it earlier. This is the film that got me on the right course with Jared Leto. I think he's absolutely amazing as the villainous industrialist Neander Wallace. But I also have to give love to Sylvia Hoeks as the relentless replicant enforcer Love. I'd never seen her in anything before and I haven't seen anything since. Mm-hmm. And she killed me. She was absolutely amazing. I think it's flawless. And I'm going to throw this out there. It's the best sequel since The Empire Strikes Back.
Ooh. Yeah, he's got a point. He has got a point.
Maybe Gremlins 2.
The new batch.
Maybe. Maybe.
Masterpiece.
But my God, yeah.
This film, it's like a finely assembled orchestra where everything falls into place and everything is aligned in the universe. Ryan Gosling is not just a pretty face. He's going to be a Hollywood legend in 10, 20 years' time, and people will hopefully go back to this film and remember him for being so great. Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford, we were so worried he was going to rest on his laurels, but he delivered such an emotional performance that I think none of us expected him to do. I personally loved Ana de Armas as Joy, and the sex scene, it's Source Cast today, boys.
Yeah, that was Source Cast. Very weird.
The sex scene between Ryan Gosling and, of course, Mackenzie Davis. I think that's one of the most beautiful sex scenes, if not one of the most beautiful scenes, because we have this beautiful visuals of Joy's face appearance and then Mackenzie's face, and it all melds in together. I think it's just it's a beautiful way of showing sex and the future together. And of course, the music. The music is almost like a tribute to the original Vangelis. So you've got Hans Zimmer and Benjamin Wallfisch who create this kind of synthy, nostalgic, kind of neon-esque soundtrack, which just blurs beautifully with the visuals, the story and the performances. Everything about this just strikes the right chord.
It does, and the soundtrack manages to do something which it seems impossible, but it manages to feel both retro and futuristic simultaneously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it is retro, it's pulling us back to the 80s original, but it also still feels like the kind of weird shit they would listen to in Los Angeles in 2049.
And it's so fresh, too. Yeah. It completely like draws inspiration from maybe like electro bands like Daft Punk, Sigur Rós, Royksopp, but it's just something completely original.
Wow.
Phenomenal.
It's like Angelette to the core. It's got the old sounds.
Exactly,
it's
very similar.
With the fresh sounds.
Yeah,
it's
very similar.
We were all against this. Let's be completely honest. When this announced that they're making it after so many years, all of us were like, it's never going to live up to it. Mm. You couldn't. It's Ben's favourite film. If they made Jaws 2 now, actual Jaws 2 now, or The Thing Part 2, you would be like, I can't see this working. It's never going to do it. Yeah. You can watch them both back to back. And I've seen some people online say it's as good as Blade Runner, and you can't argue. Yeah. If they think it's as good, do you know what? Fuck it, it is for them. You know, you can't go, no way. Mm. It's that good.
Yeah.
Even Secret Cinema did slight little nods to Blade Runner 2049. There was a bit when I was a droid when I went on my night, and I had to go a different way to what my other half went to. And they did the whole interlink thing that Ryan Gosling's character did.
Oh, really?
Yep, we had to look into a TV and we had to do interlink.
Oh,
interlink.
Nice.
Really, really good. And again, it was, you know, it didn't need to because it was a homage to the first Blade Runner, but it was just a lovely little nod.
I do believe, honestly, in 20, 30 years, we'll be looking back at Blade Runner 2049 as groundbreaking, as much as we now do look at the original.
And there's no reason why that wouldn't happen, because people forget now that the original Blade Runner wasn't a hit. It pretty much bombed at the box office. It was only in future years that it became this cult classic and people then realised that it's a masterpiece. And I think, again, 2049 didn't do so well at the cinema. I think in future years, people will realise they slept on yet another goddamn masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
It blows my mind that Blade Runner and The Thing came out the same day.
The same day? Not even the same year, same month, the same day.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't
Astounding.
It? Astounding. Amazing. Wow. Well, he did some other films as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's hear one, because social media was absolutely insane. And I did think it would be, I thought it'd be quite quiet, because not everyone's on board with him.
Yeah, it's true, but it was incredibly popular. On Twitter, Alan Wardle at Mr. A. Wardle said, Arrival, not only because it's a great film in itself, but because of what Villeneuve gets out of the actors, especially Amy Adams, who is just perfect. Now, we didn't love this film when we saw it, but I've still yet to give it a second go.
I think I need to, because it came through a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's Villeneuve, so it can't be that bad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It must be. I think I wasn't in the right frame of mind when I saw it.
I can't remember what my problems with it were.
No.
Sitting here now, I can't remember what it was I didn't like. I'll have to go back and listen to our review.
End up watching it and loving it now.
It's a very haunting film, because you think it's strictly about aliens, but it's much, much more than that. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really sort of a grounded film. It's beautiful. I really enjoyed it.
On Instagram, Josh Griffin, a.k.a. Josh Griffin Drums, has agreed with me and Gemma, said, has to be Blade Runner 2049, the film that really should not have worked, but damn it, it did.
Damn it, true.
Correct. On Twitter, A Darkchild, at A Darkchild, has said, Incendies. Now, I haven't seen Incendies. It's a French-Canadian movie, and it was pretty much the last of his art films before he moved to Hollywood. But it was very, very highly rated. It was the one that people in Hollywood noticed him for. That's why they started giving him jobs.
Oh, I've not seen it either.
No, I need to, because I want to be able to say I've seen all of his work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of one that I know that Mark and I haven't seen, on Facebook, Tom Rounder said, Enemy, a brilliant and difficult performance from Jake Gyllenhaal and has Villeneuve's style all over it.
Why have we not watched it?
I don't know.
It's mental, isn't it?
I think it's because it didn't get great reviews, so we just kind of backburnered it.
But it's Jakey boy and your boy.
Uh-huh.
I don't get it.
No.
Crazy, have you seen it?
No, I haven't either.
I might just pick it as a fucking rewatch in a few weeks so we can say it.
On Twitter, Mark79, at Mark79, agrees with our Mark. He said, Sicario, the whole convoy sequence through Juarez up to the tense border crossing scene. Epic.
Yep.
Epic.
That is the right word for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing.
Right. And then finally on Facebook, Anthony Goodman has said, big fan of Prisoners. That being said, I've never watched a Denis Villeneuve film that I didn't love.
Oh my God, I love Prisoners.
Prisoners rules,
the
man.
Ending.
Oh,
gut punch.
Bleak.
So good.
Yeah.
Amazing performances from Hugh Jackman, especially.
Yeah. Really good film.
And Jakey Boy.
Jakey Boy again.
I now want to go home and watch Prisoners, Blade Runner, and definitely Sicario after talking about it.
Yeah. And Enemy as well.
Enemy,
throw it in. I'll kind of watch one. Maybe we'll just do a skip trip to my house and we'll just watch Enemy.
Like
I'd love us to all lose our virginity to that film together. Do you know what I mean? It's very rare that all three of us have not seen a film.
It is true. Yeah.
And this is such a big one. Let's do it at some point.
All right. It sounds messy.
Fantastic.
Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis? So as we've said, it was an incredibly popular round. Lots of votes. Even though he's only got a handful of films, Blade Runner 2049 was the overwhelming favourite.
Come on.
However, Sicario put up a very good fight in second place. Surprisingly, there was a lot of love for Arrival, which got about the same amount as Prisoners, which I didn't expect. A lot of people, however, said, so-and-so is my favourite until Dune comes out. So there are very, very, very high expectations for his version of Dune.
Like the whole world starring in Dune.
Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
I can't wait for it.
And we will be reviewing that on a future episode.
There we go.
Whatever happens.
There we go.
I'm sure him and Tarantino have got like one up on each other every week. Like, well, I've got him.
Do you think it's kind of like a Lords of Chaos-esque rivalry they've got, except no killing?
Yeah, without the killings.
How many killings?
It's going to be tough, I think, to top this one.
Yeah.
I think
so. It's your turn to pick it, isn't it, Mark?
No pressure.
You got the part. Do you want a drum roll?
Always. I'm actually tense because it's just... It's tough.
Uh-huh.
So on the next episode, we will be masturbating over David Fincher.
Ooh!
Nice!
Finchy! The Rewatch. It's the 40th anniversary this year of Alien, from 1979, directed by Ridley Scott. In the deepest depths of space, seven people and a cat are on board the ship Nostromo, coming home to Earth. However, upon their journey, they pick up a distress call from a distant moon. Upon exploration of this place, curiosity takes over one member, Kane, resulting in physical contact with an unknown alien life form. Despite vocal opposition from Warrant Officer Ripley, the comrade comes back on the ship. But has an uninvited being joined them on board? Shall we find out?
I need to do my intros like that, don't
I? You should.
That's all about what...
Put some bloody work in, Mark, like Gemma and I do every week.
Yeah.
Sounds good though, doesn't it?
It did, yeah. And not just, this film's about a band.
And things happen.
Yes. Nicely done.
So we had a lot of response about this particular film online, so... It's nice to hear your opinions, but it's also very nice to hear my two other bros' opinions. I said bros. I feel like I'm about to smash a can in my head and call upon a frat party. Enough.
Let's bro out.
Let's bro out, man. But enough about that. Ben, please tell me your thoughts on Alien.
It's a very good film, of course, and I would never deny that. However, for me, it only really gets great in the second half, and especially in the last half an hour or so, when the fully grown alien is stalking the crew members of the ship. Up to that point, some parts of the film were a bit of a slog. It is a great film, certainly, but I think only because of the latter half.
Okay, Mark.
It's a masterpiece. You all know my top five films of all time is Aliens, which I much prefer.
Ditto.
But from start to finish, it's very uneasy to watch this film. Ben said there, it's a good 40 minutes, you know, until we get just people on the ship just sitting there, eating, discussing stuff.
Yeah.
Not a lot happens, but the payoff is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is absolutely perfection once it kicks in.
Yeah, it's a masterclass in sci-fi horror, really. I think it's a beautiful example of tension being stretched to a point that it can snap at any moment. I think it's visually and conceptually stunning, with strong performances throughout the cast, with fear striking through the screen and, of course, through the audience. I love it.
I think the key word you've just mentioned there is tension. The film is incredibly tense all the way through, and one of the keys to that is the fact that we don't see the xenomorph, the alien, until around an hour into the film. And then when we do see it, it only has around 4 minutes screen time in the entirety of the film, which is a wonderful thing because... It's not seeing it that creates the tension. That's what creates the suspense. It's the fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
That's what makes the film so great in that respect.
Yeah, and that's everybody's fears.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing anything about why they're scared.
I think that's why Jaws works so well.
Yeah.
Okay, we see it, but it's also the times you don't see it that you think, fuck.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's also, I think this film's very claustrophobic. You know, that ship seems very small.
Yeah.
Even though it's a big aircraft, I'm always thinking it feels like the size of this flat where you're like in each other's business all the time. And imagine that whole...
That's all we are. We're always in each other's business.
But it's true. You feel very, very locked in.
Yes.
Yeah.
And from the start to the finish, it doesn't get any easier.
That's true. They can't play like swing ball outside in space, can they?
No.
No.
They can't go out for a beer.
No.
They're trapped.
No.
And then when you've got a bastard alien on board...
And cat.
Oh, what a bastard he is as well. Yes. I'll tell you what, he's a rotter.
He's a troublemaker, yeah. That one. Oh.
Shall we talk about the direction? Yes. Because there isn't many better directors in the business than this guy.
Yes, it's true. And I agree with you, just going off on a tangent ever so slightly, that I prefer Aliens to Alien. And this is probably the only instance where I'd ever prefer James Cameron over Ridley Scott.
Because
Ridley Scott, to me, is the king. He's an absolute master. He's made some dogshit films, let's be fair.
Yep.
But that's what happens if you make a film every couple of years. You're going to have some duds. This ain't one of them. His direction is so fluid and flawlessly done. Mm-hmm.
It's very quiet, the way how he moves around into the ship. So you get kind of a very small idea of how big the ship actually is, even especially when you've got the likes of Dallas crawling through the tunnels, mm-hmm. trying to find, you know, this alien. You've also got the small room as to when they have their breakfast. You don't really get an idea of how big the space actually is. It's all closed together. It reminded me a lot of 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Yeah,
especially
massively.
When they go into that sort of that white room with Mother, when they're communicating with the onboard ship. I thought there was a lot of Kubrick inspired ideas perhaps, but I don't think it's necessarily a rip off of that film.
If you want an example of a film that stands the test of time, 40 years ago this film was made.
1979!
I've got the Blu-ray set and it looks crystal clear.
Yeah.
It looks better than most films that are out now. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look dated.
No.
It's because, again, they build these sets, they have these designs, like Star Wars in the 70s, like Jaws, where you think, actually, you haven't got CGI, it doesn't look stupid. It looks so fucking awesome.
It does. The only thing about it that gives its age away is Sigourney Weaver's bouffant late 70s, early 80s hairstyle.
Yeah.
Other than that, you would think it was made yesterday.
Yeah, because there's no product going on in those follicles. Yeah.
She needed to be born 10 years later like me and have curtains. Then,
and
that's the film I want. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I don't think it would have been a hit.
No. Looking at late 90s boy band kind of looks. Yeah, I don't think so. And talking about Sigourney Weaver, my God, she is so cool. She's so naturalistic as a leader, and she exudes this confidence that you feel like she's got your back, mm-hmm. despite anything, despite, you know, if there's something wrong with the paperwork or if there's a big bastard alien chasing over you, she's got your back. And I just think the level of what she has, that kind of cool exterior, just completely rules for me.
And it's astounding as well to think that it was her first lead role in a film.
Yeah.
She'd done a few bit parts, a couple of bit parts and a bit of theatre work, but she wasn't a big name by any stretch. So to put the weight of this on her, and for the first, two-thirds of the film, it's more of an ensemble piece, but as the characters are gradually getting whittled down, and then it becomes her show by the last half an hour, and to bear the brunt of that, mm-hmm. and to do it with aplomb like she does, it's a fantastic performance.
I think that's why I prefer Aliens, because from the off, we get just the focus on her.
Yeah, I agree.
And then it's her for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Like you said, that we only get her after about an hour and 20 minutes, and this is like, I'm ready now. I absolutely love her.
Yeah, she's amazing. One of the things I've never understood is the scene towards the end when she gets away in the escape shuttle and she's getting undressed so she can go into stasis. Why is she wearing child's pants? She is wearing the smallest pair of underwear I've ever seen. You could see her arse crack.
Yeah.
And she's clearly had a Brazilian, because she's going to have had to wear those pants. Was that just titillation, do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, the angle that was shot too, it was her crotch in the middle of the screen.
Yeah.
I agree. I think there was something a little bit
I think
suspect.
Ridley wanted to get Wriggly.
I'm not sure about that one. I'd have gone Ridley wanted to get Diddly.
Oh! Yeah. Yes, can we edit that and say said it?
No.
But talking about Sigourney Weaver, did you know who was up against her for this role?
I do.
Meryl Streep.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Would have been a very different film.
Yeah, I think it was, the reason why she didn't get the part is because her partner at the time had passed away, mm-hmm. so she was grieving a lot. Aww. So therefore, Sigourney managed to, have the moment where she could step in. And of course, an iconic character was born from Weaver's performance.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some of the practical effects. It's something we bang on about it every goddamn episode.
We should do that.
Let's talk about it. The chestburster scene.
Oh my God, it's still effective now.
Oy vey, that's a phenomenal scene. It is up there with The Thing. It reminds me of the scenes from The Thing just miraculous special effects or practical effects. And one of the things I love is that the cast was only half clued into what was going to happen.
Yeah.
They knew something was going to come out of John Hurt's chest.
Yeah.
They didn't know it was going to explode with such force and piss blood over everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
So the other, I can't remember the character's name, but the other woman, not Ripley.
Oh, Lambert.
Yeah, when she got covered in blood and she started shrieking, that was her legit reaction, because she did not know that was going to happen.
Yeah, the guy who played Parker, he was so affected by the scene that when he went home, he didn't speak to his wife and he just locked himself in a room for a few hours because he couldn't get over the shock and the blood spatter everywhere. He was really, really surprised.
It's amazing. The moment we see the blood splatter and they're holding him down and then they give him something to bite and he doesn't even want it. He's like, no, I'm all right. And you see the shirt going up. And you at that point, I remember the first time I watched it, I was only a kid. My dad would let me watch it when I was about 12.
Really?
Yeah, he didn't let my mum know. It was one of my birthday presents. He took me down to Blockbuster Video.
Amazing.
I was like, I want to watch Alien. He's like, you can't. It's an 18. And that back then, it was like that, Silence of the Lambs and Poltergeist were on the list of my mum would never let me watch till I'm 18. But my dad was like, you can have it while your mum's away and you can watch it. And it just, I remember that scene. I was like, my God.
Did you notice after the chest bursting scene, John Hurt's hands, they shake. It's like this sort of after effect of when somebody's dead, his like involuntary spasms. I found that so disturbing and like it really settled what just happened.
The only thing that kind of undercuts the scene is when the alien then scurries away.
Oh, yeah, but it's
little plastic rat run. That looks shit.
Red Dwarf also did a parody on this. They did the polymorph and they did that specifically based on Alien. And then the polymorph 2 is a piss take on Aliens.
But the alien creature design needs every award
ever. Oh my lord.
It looks great, doesn't it? When they're actually showing it and in his actual stomach and there's blood from it and it's mouth opening, that looks ace for a puppet.
Yeah.
Do you know what they used for like the drool effect?
Spaff.
Nope, they didn't use spaff, believe it or not.
That's a shame.
But you're not far off.
Oh my
god. What they used was lube and shredded condoms.
I wasn't far off.
You were not.
Well, so there could have been some jizz in there.
Well,
I assume they were not used condoms.
No,
Mark.
these were fully fresh, ready
that's
to go.
Mad.
Yeah, but they used that, and I think it just added to that maniacal effect of this sort of alien queen that's out, just hell bent on killing everything and everybody. Also, I love how the alien disguises itself in a ship.
Yes,
that was terrifying. There's two instances: the one in the chains where they're about to, where she's about to sort of swoop down on Brett. I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then right at the very end in the pod where it disguises itself as some kind of canister. And it took me a few watches to actually realise it was there. It shivers down my spine.
I love the fact that it was just a guy in a suit in this first Alien film. And it was something like a 6'10" Nigerian student they found in a bar. They'd been looking for someone to get into this suit and they saw this guy who was lanky and skinny and had these long, thin arms and they were like, he's our guy.
Yeah, a guy called Balaji Badeje.
Mm-hmm. Oh, him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. He never did anything after this, but I love the physicality because you only got glimpses, which obviously alluded to that fear. But Ridley Scott said he never filmed head-on to the alien because it had too much human facial features.
Yeah.
So therefore, it was always on the side. It was always sort of very quick glimpses. But I think the only real sort of glimpse you really get of the alien is when it's sort of circling into space.
Yeah, that's when you see its full body, isn't it? Yeah, when it's getting blown out the back of the ship.
Yeah. There is one really funny bit that I can't help but laugh every time I see it. It's when John Hurt has died and they wrap him in sheets and they just yeet him out of the alien, out of the ship. They just sort of, he just goes, it's like, go long, touchdown.
We can praise Ridley Scott and visually we have said how great it is, but I don't think this film would be what it was without Jerry Goldsmith and the music that he adds to this film. Is some of the best use of sound you'll ever have. And not just for the fact of the sounds he creates, but the silences.
Mm-hmm.
And at times, the lack of music is just as effective as the sound itself.
Yeah.
Those scenes are so perfectly done where the silence is there and he lets it breathe. And I'm sure Ridley Scott's having the big say where he wants this scene to be intense, but the silences just get you. And then when the slow synth sounds come in and these low tone bass, from the moment the film starts, that opening scene with that low sound that you get when the credit comes up.
Yes!
Absolutely fucking awesome. One of the best scores ever.
I agree entirely. And it's something that Ridley Scott did so well, was corralling all the right people for all the departments. So music, you've covered there. The visuals, he brought in H.R. Giger. And all of Giger's designs, from the alien design down to... My favourite Giger design in the whole thing is the space jockey.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And it's one of those scenes where I always think, you know, I wish I was around in 1979, because now we're used to crazy, weird visuals all the time. But back in 1979, imagine being in the cinema and seeing the people from the ship go into that room and there's that giant space jockey and that weird kind of machine. Your jaw would have been on the floor.
Yeah.
Would have been a mind-blowing thing to see in 1979.
40 years ago.
Yeah.
It's mad.
But also the design of the face hugger.
Oh, my God.
Like a spider and a hand fused together. You've got the long limbs and then like these knuckles that come out of nowhere. And I think they use like real animal innards for the organs.
Mm. It's gross.
Terrifying.
That was one of my biggest fears as a kid. Like my dad shouldn't have made me let watch this when I was 12. But knowing you could fall asleep and have that hug to your face.
Yeah.
And they were going to paint it. I think they were going to colour it red or something, and they didn't. They left it as the original skin tone because it kind of looks almost human. It looks like a human hand, which makes it weird. If they'd have painted it crazy bright red or bright green to make it look more alien, it wouldn't have been as threatening, I don't think. But the fact that it looked like human flesh made it nastier to me.
That's the fear, isn't it? Because it looks so human-like.
And it still looks terrifying to this day, 40 years on.
Yeah.
It's amazing. What's your favourite scenes? Mine is when Parker uses the flamethrower on the Ash's corpse, you know, when he's just burning the shit out of the remains.
Yeah.
That visually looks amazing. It's horrendous watching Ash's actual body and its whole thing up in flames. I think that scene alone is one of my favourite in cinema history.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
It's so good.
I think for me, probably my favourite scene is when they take Ash's head and they start him up again, and he's just being a bit of a dick to them, like, you're fucked. You're not going to kill the alien.
But it looks good, that scene. It shouldn't look right.
Oh, no, Dallas in the crawl space.
Yeah.
When the little sort of the GPS system is going a little bit crazier and crazier with the noise, and then you get that flash of the alien with his hands up. It just goes, and then Dallas is done.
Yep.
Yeah. And, oh, that horrible bit near the end, though, when you see Dallas and he's not dead.
Yeah.
He's caught up in that sort of cocoon. He's like, kill me.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Wow. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm spent. Should we wrap it up?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now I want to go and watch Aliens and never watch Aliens 3.
Exactly. Or Resurrection.
Yeah.
Mark, go ahead.
Do you know what? Weirdly, you'd think after everything I've said, it's a perfect 10. Mm-hmm. But because Aliens is my fifth favourite film of all time, it's not a perfect 10. It's a 9 because Aliens is better, but it's still absolutely fucking awesome.
Lovely stuff. Ben?
Yeah, I echo what Mark said there. I prefer Aliens because Aliens is more of a war film or an action film, whereas this is more of a kind of quiet thriller type horror.
Yeah.
I give it an 8, a very high 8.
Yeah, lovely stuff. I do absolutely adore Aliens a little bit more than I do Alien. So this is still a great film, and I think I'm going to give it a deserved high 9 out of 10. So because I'm a mathematical genius, you know, not bragging, Alien gets a skip to the end, 9 out of 10. Jolly good show.
Whose rewatch choice is it next?
Oh, it's me.
It's a big one, dude.
It is. Now, I absolutely love this feature. It might be my favourite feature of the show. And one of the reasons for that is we can bring different types of films. We've done a lot of blockbusters recently, like Alien, and I love doing that. But my favourite thing to do is bring along films that I love, but other people may not know about or may not have seen.
Oh, colour me intrigued.
So because of that, this time round, what we're going to do is Roger Avery's 2002 take on Bret Easton Ellis' novel, The Rules of Attraction.
Oh my God, yes!
And for those of you who want to join us in the rewatch, it's currently available on Amazon Prime.
Beautiful.
Yes!
It's now time for a brand new game show. I don't want to build it up too much, but it's probably the best game show of all time. So that's pretty good. Jesus. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be quite an original concept. I think something we can
concept.
Say that we...
I've never heard you say
that
word.
We've done ourselves. We haven't kind of ripped off anything like Bullseye or, you know, Family Fortune.
No.
It's very original.
Okay.
What's going to happen is, you know when you go to the cinema and you see a nice cinema poster
I
up on the wall?
I do. I've been in that situation.
Or you've been at home and bought an iconic film poster yourself to display on your own wall. Like
every
Ben
day.
Has got Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, how would a game show work where we could incorporate these great, iconic film posters?
Go on.
So what I thought is, it's a team game, but what we're going to do is describe the poster we see without the other person seeing it, and they simply need to guess from the description you've just provided. It makes sense, really.
I get it.
There's no real twist, there's no bets where you have to invest how much points you want to do or anything like that. It's literally, if you get it right, you get a point.
Yeah.
If you don't get it right, you can either pass and move on to the next or spend the whole time on that one poster, which would be stupid and something I'd probably do. Yeah. Did you just burp?
I did.
Could you move away? Move your head from the microphone
when
you belch.
Sorry, I was paralysed in that moment.
It's hard to know how many to do, but what I thought as a team game would be to do 15 each. So there'll be 30 points up for grabs as a team.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This time round, I'll be the games master scoring. So you two, do you want to be Team Gen or Benham? Or is it Benham we use?
Benham?
Benham?
Let's go with Bemma.
Bemma.
No, Booch. Team Booch.
Okay, Boochy Booch. Right, okay, so you're Team Booch. Time-wise, I'm thinking 3 minutes each. Okay. I think that's quite fair.
So I get 3 minutes to describe to Gemma, yep. and then she gets 3 minutes to yep. describe to me. Okay.
And there's 15 posters each.
Okay. Oh.
But there's going to be a bit of... I think we've got to be quite fair here. I'm not going to give points if you do stuff like, oh, it's Mark's favourite film, or we reviewed yeah. this recently.
Okay.
You only say what you see. A bit mm-hmm. like what Ray Walker says on... Is it Ray Walker?
Roy Walker? It's Roy, but Roy. Okay. Ray.
Okay, now.
Jesus.
I'm sorry, I forgot how famous he is, and everyone knows Roy Walker.
He is famous.
Yes, Mr. Chips.
Don't you dare besmirch his name.
I think it's quite simple. So there's going to be 15 for Ben to choose, then 15 for you.
Okay.
Really easy. You're going to describe it. I will be really, really strict. And I think just to make it a little bit fairer as well, I'm being a bit harsh now and I'm getting really harsh. You can't say any of the actors' names or the characters' names. Because if you went, oh, it's a film with Ben Affleck, he's a pilot.
Yeah.
You know, we would all know it's that absolute masterpiece, Pearl Harbor. That's a shit film.
I didn't know. I was like, when was he a pilot?
We've got two things to decide left. Who wants to go first and a name for the game show?
Oh.
Well, I imagine you've got the name.
I have.
Give it to us.
It's Flick Me Faster. Because you're going to be flicking through the names quite quickly. Flick Me Faster.
Christ.
It was going to be Flick Me Off. Ben. But yeah. Ben.
On the next episode, one of us has to say this game name.
It sounds nice. Listen.
And then the
this
other one
round, this time it's round two of Flick Me Faster. It sounds all right.
Okay.
Ben's lost the will to live.
I don't even know why I bother with this.
Does that window fully open?
Which would you prefer? Flick Me Off or Flick Me Faster?
Let's go with Flick Me Faster. Let's go with your first instinct, Mark.
And who would like to go first?
I'll be the describer first.
Okay. Right, okay.
So can't mention the film, obviously. Can't mention any character or actor names. I can only describe what's in the picture.
Yep.
Okie doke. Makes sense.
So you're going to have 3 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And your time starts now.
In this picture, you've got a beautiful woman with jet black hair lying on a bed holding a cigarette.
Oh, Pulp Fiction.
Correct. The next one, you've got 5 people. They all look like they're in the 70s, one of whom has got lovely coiffed hair and a thick moustache. He's wearing a dark red jacket.
Oh, my God.
The other members of his team have also got clearly 70s haircuts. One of them's a woman.
Ooh.
They appear to be a team.
Oh, okay. A team?
Yeah.
Oh, bollocks.
The colour of his coat is important. What, you know, think of a tone of red.
Okay, a tone of red?
Think of types of red, dark
Scarlet.
Red.
Scarlet.
No.
Burgundy.
Correct.
Oh, Anchorman.
Correct. This one, it's a very muscular man in dark sunglasses holding a gun. And he looks like a badass. He's wearing a leather jacket, no shirt.
Oh, Terminator 2? Terminator.
No, yes.
Yes.
This time it's a young fella wearing a gilet stepping out of a car with a gull door.
How would he wear a gilet? It's Back to the Future.
Correct. This is a woman's face with a moth on her mouth.
Oh, Silence of the Lambs.
Correct.
Brilliant work.
This is a dude wearing a kind of fisherman's hat, big glasses, and he's smoking a cigarette, but he's using one of those old-fashioned cigarette holders.
Oh.
And his face is all warped and weird. He's in the desert.
Oh, Christ. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Correct. Gemma's killing it.
Yes.
This is a fellow who looks like a badass explorer. He's got a hat
Indiana
on.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom?
Not that one.
Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Correct.
Earth? Yes.
This is brilliant, guys.
This is, I can't say the name of the vehicle, because but it's a type of transport that is in the sky.
Top Gun. No.
Is that a type of transport that's in the sky,
airplane,
Gemma?
Airplane.
Correct. Fuck me. You know what I mean? I gave it on a plate.
Oh, yes. No. This is great work, guys.
This is a man who is in some kind of frozen place. He's wearing a big parka and there's light coming out of his face.
Correct. Thing.
This is a chap. God, how do I describe this?
Go on, do it.
He's got a big quiff. He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt and he's riding on 2 alligators.
Oh my God.
A minute left.
Oh fuck. Ace Ventura.
It is.
Yes.
This is a chap who is, he's got makeup on, he's wearing a bowler hat and holding a knife.
Oh, Clockwork Orange.
Correct.
Brilliant.
This is a guy in the future. He's holding a gun. He's also with a beautiful young lady with jet black hair, bright red lips, holding a cigarette.
Oh fuck! They all hold cigarettes, don't they? Smoking kills. I don't know.
It's a drawn picture. It's
oh, Blade Runner.
Correct. Oh, this is a picture of a baldy man's head. He's got a bright white head with bits of red on it. It's blood.
Me in the future.
Yeah.
Natural Born Killers?
No.
Oh, fuck.
I'm going to pass on this one. This one, it's a guy. It's one of the worst pictures I've ever seen. It's a guy who claims to be in his 40s when he's clearly in his 90s. He's got a wonky eye.
Nicolas Cage?
No.
Tommy Wiseau, correct. Correct.
Time's up. Well done. Amazing.
How many did we get?
Wow, you got 13 out of 15.
Oh, I was on the last one. I didn't get a chance.
Amazing.
Didn't get it. Well, that's amazing for Gemma. Gemma did brilliantly. I don't think I'm going to do half as well.
Unbelievable. The only one you didn't get was Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah,
that was describing.
That was very difficult.
Oh,
I think.
That's what you mean. Yeah.
Can you see I've been quite generous? Yes, the films were very obvious. Don't pass anything at this point. Well done. That's
Thank
amazing.
You. Wow.
And time-wise, that was really good.
Do we still have time on the clock? Oh, no, we ran out right at the end.
Just at the point.
Great descriptions, Ben.
And the last one, which you just missed on, which is absolutely fine, was going to be A Star Is Born, just for if anyone, I think you cheated. No, we didn't.
There we go.
A great start, guys. You've got 13 out of 15. Gemma, you're now going to be describing the films to Ben.
Uh-huh.
You've got 3 minutes again.
Right.
And your time
starts
now.
Okay, we've got a man in leather. He's holding a great big whacking sword and he looks like he's on the brink of revolution.
Highlander.
No. He's got a bit of a battle scar on his face, and he's
Braveheart.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well done. Okay, there are five people. We've got four lads and a lady, and they're all looking at the camera in black and white. You've got one that's pointing at the camera. You've got a lady in a dress that's kind of feeling a little bit cheeky. You've got a man giving the V's, flicking the V's. Very rude. You've got another guy with
Trainspotting.
Yes. There is a child with his hands on his face screaming while there's some dodgy criminals looking at him
Home
behind.
Alone.
Yes. There is a lady with some mysterious black eye makeup. She's wearing a crown. It looks like she's about to do some kind of, I don't know, she's very coiffed. She's very serious. She's got. She doesn't have normal looking eyes. They look like different coloured eyes.
Oh, God. Dark black Swan?
Yes.
Amazing.
Okay, this one is an animated poster. So there is a hand holding a gun, but it's in the middle of like a New York skyscraper.
Mean Streets.
Yes! Okay, again, another animated one. There is a man in a red leather jacket with a pill on the back, and he's walking towards a red futuristic motorcycle.
Akira.
Yes!
Good work.
Okay, this one. There is a child and an alien life force in a moon looking wondrously out into the distant galaxy.
Mac and me?
Yeah, it is. Of course it is. Oh, okay. Right, so this is clearly in like a canyon, and there is a man in the middle of this canyon with a great big rock underneath it. He looks trapped, but it's a very beautiful landscape. It looks like
127 hours?
Oh my God, yes.
Amazing, Ben.
Wow.
It's the only thing I know about a man trapped in a canyon.
It's the best.
Okay, there's a lot going on. This is an action sequence. There is a man that's kind of it looks like he's rotating in a building, but there's people. Oh, God, this is a really tricky
one. Diehard.
No, it's not. Can I pass on this one?
You can if you want.
Yeah, should we pass?
Yep.
Let's pass, all right. Yeah, that one's. Okay, it's a purple sky. There's a landscape behind, and there's a lady in a yellow dress and a man in a suit dancing
La
by
La La Land.
Yeah! Okay, there is a chap with a white shirt and jeans, and he's holding a box. But what's in the box?
There's Seven.
No, not quite.
Oh.
There's some furry little hands
Gremlins.
Coming out of this box. Yes. Okay, there is a very scared but tough man, and he's looking at a skyscraper, and the top of it is blown off. What's he going to do? Yes.
30 seconds left.
Okay, there's a guy all in black, white face, looks a bit of a goth, but there's also an animal underneath
crow.
Him. Yes. Okay, now this one, there's red, lots of red, and there's a great big bald bloke, looks a bit old, but looks a bit mental at the same time. And there's a sunset, and with what looks like mini tiny helicopters going on.
Apocalypse Now.
Yes, he has.
10 seconds.
Okay, last one. Okay, it's a man, but his bottom half of his face is quite robotic. He's holding a big gun, he's got like a gun hat on top too.
RoboCop.
Time's up.
Oh.
Can I say what it was?
Of course you can.
It was Westworld.
Oh, was it the last one?
Yep.
Yes,
yeah. Oh, wow. We did well there.
How many
did we get?
Also got 13 out of 15.
High five, Booch.
Yes, Team Booch.
The one that you missed out on where she was talking about a lot was going on, stuff moving, Inception.
Okay.
It's not the typical one.
Fair
that.
Enough.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. We did 26, man. That's great work, man.
Out of 30. Was it tense?
Very.
Yeah, it was good fun.
I'm very sweaty. Mm.
Yes, and you agree I wasn't too harsh?
No. You weren't. No, you're very fair.
I got
fair.
Mac and me in there.
Any excuse. Also the room.
So which one of you guys wants to come back next week as the Games Master?
I will be Games Master next time around.
Perfect. So it'll be Team Gemma or...
Memma.
There we go.
Ridiculous.
Well done, guys. You've got 26 and that's the score to beat in 2 weeks' time.
Can.
It's It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too. So Gemma, on this lovely spring day, what are you going to recommend to us this time round?
I'm going to recommend a TV comedy show which I am absolutely loving, and I will not be surprised if it hits my top five shows of the year. Fleabag.
Ah, wonderful.
Nice.
Oh, hot diggity damn, this is exquisite. And it's written by and starring Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who is responsible for some of the writing and producing on Killing Eve. She was also the robot voice in Solo. And it's a refreshing British comedy that is making waves across TV land at the moment. The second series is currently showing on BBC Two. Series one is available on BBC iPlayer and Amazon Prime, if you don't have iPlayer. And Bridges stars as our unnamed narrator, Fleabag. She doesn't really have a name, so Fleabag will suffice. And she takes us into a life filled with awkward family interactions, embarrassing sexual encounters, and painful tragedy along the way. She breaks the fourth wall throughout the whole show. And she commentates on the surroundings that's happening to her, to the viewer, and almost letting them sort of in on the joke. So we know exactly how she's feeling at that point in time, whereas none of the other characters can hear her addressing us. And it's not an easy watch. You cringe a lot during the whole show, and you kind of question Fleabag's choices. Even at some instances, she acknowledges them to us. So it's almost like she can hear us going, "Why are you doing that for?" And she'll just reply with, "I know, okay?" Mm-hmm. And it's remarkable. The show itself can make you laugh one minute, but it can also tug at your heartstrings the next. And this is the whole thing with comedy. Comedy is such an interesting beast because it's so easy to go to tragedy to make the situation funny. And what makes Fleabag so unique, it feels so different from the offerings that's currently out there. Tragedy is a base for a lot of the comic material, but somehow this feels much more raw and unapologetic. It also helps that she's an absolute dick in this show. She is not sympathetic. She is not trying to get you to win on her side. There's a lot of times where you do feel like, you know, she's not a good person.
Yeah.
But again, she's not trying to be a good person. She's not trying to be a martyr. She is just being who she is at that point in time, interacting the way how she does. You know, she's not looking for someone to go, "Oh, babes, come over here. Let's have a hug." No, she's doing it because that's the choice that she makes. And it's quite liberating to watch. It's a recommendation where I feel like it's kind of like you have to watch this rather than, "Oh, try this, you might like it." Mm-hmm. Please do, because this is far beyond one of the greatest British comedies of the year, if not for a very, very long time, and I simply adore it.
Well, I watched series one, which I thought was fantastic. I haven't watched series two yet because I can't watch things weekly, with the exception of Alan Partridge.
Yes.
I don't watch things weekly. I prefer to wait till the series ends and then binge them. So that's what I'm going to do with this. Is Olivia Colman in season two as well?
Oh, she is, and oh my God, she is horrible.
She's a cow, isn't she?
Proper little bint.
Yeah, but I am looking forward to seeing it. I was walking through the local shopping centre here a couple of weeks ago, and they were advertising it. So dangling from the ceiling of this massive shopping mall were these huge posters, because I think a lot of series two, it's about her getting involved in religion or something,
correct,
isn't it?
Yep.
So these posters are kind of drawings of her, but as if she's a saint on stained glass. And I was walking through the shopping centre looking at these thinking, only in Britain could we get away with this. Yeah, exactly. In America, they couldn't advertise like that because that would be blasphemous and they'd burn her at the stake. Yeah. But because in Britain, we don't give a shit about that sort of stuff. Oh, we get away with it.
I tell you what, series two is killing it. Mm-hmm. And again, it's very rare to watch a show apart from this time with Alan Partridge, which is getting better and better with each episode. This is exactly the same case with Fleabag. It's such a remarkable comedy show.
I'm guessing you've not seen any of it, Mark.
No, but I'll check it out. Everyone's been raving about it online.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's very funny.
Yeah, Olivia Colman's great as the stepmother or stepgirlfriend. Sean Clifford as Fleabag's sister Claire is also a really great, great addition to the show, who she's constantly at loggerheads with. Please check it out. You won't regret it.
Fantastic.
Sounds awesome.
It is, yeah. Mark, really, Mark, is. What have you got?
I've got a book this time.
Ooh.
It's called...
Book with words.
It is. It's, not, just, it's not just pictures.
It's bullshit. A pop-up book.
It's called Where the Wild Things Are. It's 7 pages long. No, it's called Adventures in Amity: Tales from the Jaws Ride by Dustin McNeil. Now, I thought I owned every single Jaws book available, and then I went on Amazon, and it's like, you know, at the bottom, it's like, you may like, and you're like, oh, what's this? Looked at it, it's a whole behind-the-scenes book of a ride that I never got to go on. I'm annoyed because I think they took it down and replaced it with something like Guardians of the Galaxy or Harry Potter. Uh-huh. I've always wanted to go to Universal Studios. It's one of those things I've always wanted to do.
Ditto.
I don't think you have to be a kid to enjoy it. You'd go there now and go on all these amazing rides, and it's always something I've wanted to do. So to know the whole background behind this, to have the interviews with all the designers, the engineers, all the people that actually worked on the boat itself, there's all these really rare photos of the ride without the water, the making of it, the construction. They've also got people that have been on there when it's broken down, falling overboard, all the faults that could go wrong. Mm-hmm. You might think, that isn't going to work, that's not going to keep my interest. I read it all in a day, and it's quite a thick book, to be fair, and the words aren't that big. Usually, you know, for me, yeah. I need like 10 pages. It's a good 200-300 page book.
It does sound like it's mostly pictures, though.
Yeah.
It's not, honestly. Like, there's a lot.
The size font is 58 in Arial.
But it even breaks down to like the details of the script the staff had to read. It's really, really good. Even if you're not into Jaws that much, or you're not into rides, just to know the history of such a big attraction at Universal, and then to take the choice to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People have been doing petitions online. I've seen people that does a Twitter account tweet this every day until they rebuild the ride. I think it's still available in Japan. I think they've still got it in that one, but it's awesome. The interviews and the rare photos on there is so, so good. Spielberg's been on the ride and approved of it. The cast went on the ride when it first opened. It's so good, dude.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think it. Behind the scenes of a ride.
Well, I actually nearly texted you the other day about something, because I've been reading loads of books about film, and I've been reading a couple of books about 60s and 70s film, and I wanted to get a book on Jaws, and I was going to text you and just forgot. What is the best Jaws book? If I'm going to get a book about Jaws, what's the one I should go for first?
The Jaws Log by Carl Gottlieb.
That's a good book.
He was the writer, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear more from him,
we'll see
he's also on Mark Me. But no, it's genuinely, it's all about the when he's being told on set to rewrite some of the screenplay as he's sitting there, and literally Spielberg's walking over going, you need to rewrite this scene now on the spot. It's brilliant.
I read the whole book on the flight back from Toronto back to the UK a few years ago. It's a great book.
I'll get that one then. Speaking of rides, have you seen this new Star Wars ride that's opening?
It looks incredible.
Well, it's like a Star Wars world that's at one of these studios thing. I think there's two of them. I think there's one in LA, and I think there's one in, like, there definitely is one in Florida.
Yeah.
And next year WrestleMania is in Florida, Mark. Yeah. So I think not only should we go to WrestleMania, because Florida's very easy to get to from here.
Yep.
Double bubble it. Let's get to Star Wars world while we're there.
Yeah, I'm genuinely up for
Let's do that then.
And we might get to see Flo Rida in concert again.
Oh, that'd be good.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We did genuinely see Flo Rida when we went to see WrestleMania in New Jersey a few years back. Flo Rida performed live, as did P. Diddy.
Yeah.
P. Diddy?
That's all of our Christmases come at once.
Oh, wow. Me and Ben also went to Wembley and we watched some NFL, and guess who we saw at halftime?
Go on.
Little Mix. No! So me and Ben have seen pretty much everyone.
Is that right?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
You went to get beers.
I was insanely hungover that day.
Yeah, we all were.
Because I'd battered a bottle of whiskey.
I was dying. It was after Comic-Con. We just went to NFL and we were dying. We had the best seats in the whole place somehow.
Front row.
Yeah, which is insane.
Little Mix. That's priceless.
Pretty good.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Shit.
So good.
Good lord.
So we see some good bands and we see some not so good bands.
Absolute tripe.
But yes, Adventures in Amity, Tales from the Jaws Ride.
Lovely.
Go and check it out.
Sounds good. I've gone for two things.
Oh, why are you all
greedy?
But they're two things. They're two things based on the same topic. I've gone with a book, which is Bad Blood by John Carreyrou, and a documentary called The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley by Alex Gibney. I believe the book was actually previously recommended to us by a listener a while back, but both the book and the documentary focus on the rise and fall of Theranos, which was a Silicon Valley startup that claimed to have technology that would revolutionise blood testing and eliminate the need for needles. The problem was, it was all bullshit. The technology didn't work, and they managed to hoodwink investors into ploughing hundreds of millions of dollars into this company, leading it to be valued at $9 billion.
Oh my God.
For technology that didn't work.
What?
That made the company's founder, Elizabeth Holmes, the wealthiest self-made woman in the world on paper.
Oh my God, she's been in the news so recently.
She's so weird,
man.
I need
to read this.
She's so weird.
She is.
So they also managed to blag clinics and wellness centers into using their bogus technology, leading to thousands of bullshit and potentially fatal results. Basically saying to people, oh yeah, you're absolutely fine, when they could have been dying, or oh yeah, you're dying, so you need thousands of dollars worth of expensive surgery, when in fact they were fine. The results just didn't work.
It was horrendous.
It was a crapshoot. It was disgusting, and it all came crashing down when several whistleblowers started talking to the press and to regulators, who eventually investigated the company and found it to be one big con. The investigative journalist who first broke the story was John Carreyrou, and he then wrote this book. It's the definitive account of the story, and it's an absolutely thrilling read. It reads like a thriller rather than a true life book. It details how Holmes started the company when she was a 19-year-old college dropout, all the way through the company's successes and then the eventual failure. The documentary, which is done by Oscar-winning director Alex Gibney, that only focuses on the last couple of years of the company and the aftermath of the failure. They act as great companion pieces to one another, but the book is far better because it's much more expansive, much more detailed, and it has first-hand accounts of the investigative journalism that brought the company down. The reason why it's worth watching the documentary, though, is because that has interviews with Holmes that the book didn't. She didn't comply with the book. And when you see her, Gemma's pulling her face, because Gemma, you've seen her.
Yeah.
She's so weird. She's this blonde woman with these massive blue eyes. She does not blink. She looks like an anime character, you know, when they have gigantic eyes.
Yeah.
She does not blink. She looks like a cyborg. She looks robotic with this horrible, messy blonde hair. She always wears jet black clothes and black polo necks because she's obsessed with Steve Jobs. Yeah. She believes she was going to be the next Steve Jobs, so she started wearing clothes like him. And she speaks in this bizarre deep accent, like she affects this voice,
yes,
because she wanted to seem less girly, I think. Yeah. She wanted to be able to talk to these people in high-powered business scenarios in Silicon Valley. Yeah. She's a fucking mental.
Oh, she is.
She's very weird.
Honestly, it's been over Twitter for the past few weeks, and you just look at any short video clips, like any GIFs, any stories, and it is the mystery around her is astounding.
Look her up later. Just Google Elizabeth Holmes and look at it. She's an odd job.
And you won't get out of that hole.
Yeah. The book especially, but also the film. It looks at the culture of fear within the company and how anyone who pointed out the fact that the technology didn't work got sacked. If you didn't go along with the company line, you are out on your arse. She did not care. The doc isn't as deep as the book. And honestly, it's not one of Alex Gibney's best. He's done a lot of better documentaries than this. But the whole thing is worth watching. And above and beyond this, there is an actual theatrical film in development for this. You won't like this, Mark, but starring Jennifer Lawrence as Elizabeth Holmes.
Of course.
Which I think, I know, which I think would be great casting.
You look like you've had it. That's it.
He's
Mark's
furious.
Thrown in
He's
the
sick
towel.
Of it now.
I'm just having cider.
He's done with it.
He's going to flip a table.
But this will bring you back on side. It's looking to be directed by Adam McKay, who did The Big Short and Vice.
I'm back on.
Yeah, so I think that will make a fantastic film when it comes out, because it's a brilliant story with some very interesting characters.
God, yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Guys, you know when you recommend stuff and I never ever take it on board?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I promise you that I do stuff.
Uh-huh.
I actually did this time.
No. Oh, yeah.
So about 2 years ago...
Brilliant.
You guys recommended a documentary called Dear Zachary.
Yeah.
We did. God, oh, brutal. My heart.
So out of all the stuff that you guys have recommended to me, I decided to watch it. And after talking about Free Solo last week, you know I've been working my way through quite a lot of documentaries. You both had it as one of your best ever documentaries.
We did.
So I thought, I need to do it.
Yeah.
I hate you both.
Oh, no.
Why did you do that?
I'm so sorry.
Those grandparents were lovely people.
They are the greatest.
And I want them to be my grandparents. Mm. Why did that woman do that to them?
Because she's a fucking nutter.
Yeah. It was very well done.
She's burning in hell.
And it was
as
a very
speak.
Good documentary and a proper eye opener.
Yeah.
But it fucking harrowed me, and now I'm feeling like I just want to throw myself off a cliff.
It's a heartbreaker.
Yeah. 20 minutes straight, just sobbing. Oh. Just complete sobbing.
Cheers. So I'm not going to take anything else you say ever.
So hold on. So does this mean that you'll be watching Dead Man's Shoes in about 18 months?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, okay.
It's not bad.
It's worth noting the director of Dear Zachary also did The Jinx.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which is a fantastic documentary series. It was on HBO a few years back.
Right.
The Jinx is arguably the best true crime series there's ever been.
All about Robert Durst. It is just, it's mental, isn't it?
So 2021, I'll watch that.
There we go.
But more importantly, social media. What did they come back with this time?
We've got so much. Our old mate Lyndon Wells on Facebook.
Yay!
He agrees with you, Gemma. He's gone Fleabag. He said it's the funniest thing on TV at the minute. The first episode of the new series is a masterpiece.
Oh, couldn't agree more, Lyndon, and high five.
On Twitter, Meet Milan at Meet Milana said, I rewatched all the Batman movies from the 90s. After a few years, I can finally appreciate how great Two-Face and the Riddler were, and of course the Joker. It's nice seeing Two-Face and the Riddler from the otherwise terrible Batman Forever getting some love.
Yeah. That's an old classic.
Yeah, Jim Carrey was good in that.
Yeah. He was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind watching that one day.
On Instagram, gorilla_radio_AU has said the book The Dirt by Motley Crue and Neil Strauss. While the movie is now on Netflix, the book is much better, a must read. Now, Mark, I know you watched the film the other day, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, it annoyed me because it's like a Austin Powers sketch at times.
Oh.
It's really humorous and it doesn't touch hardly anywhere near the book. The book is one of the best rock and roll stories you'll ever read. So I was like, this is going to be fucking ace.
Yeah.
It's tonally all over the shop. They don't know what they want to do. At moments, you're laughing out loud.
Yeah.
At times, it's like, oh, look, they're at a dinner. He's getting a blowjob from this stripper. Ha, ha, ha. And next scene, there's murder scenes and stabbings. It doesn't know what it wants to be. It's a shame because it could could have been fucking awesome.
Didn't one of the members of the band kill someone in a car crash?
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And then Motley Crue, in their infinite wisdom, have released some new songs for this film, which are apparently terrible. One of which is called Crash and Burn.
Lovely.
Which I think is a little bit inappropriate.
Yes.
To be fair.
Just a bit.
Oh dear.
Fuck me.
Did you know that when the royal family had Funko Pops come out, this mm-hmm. is genuine, Princess Diana had one, and they did a Chase edition. So you buy it, and it had a sticker on saying Chase. Yeah. I'm telling you now,
boy.
Surely someone would have gone, shouldn't have done that.
Oh, boy.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Good God.
But yeah, the dirt, it wasn't everything it should have been. It's still a good watch. If you've got nothing else to watch on Netflix, Saturday uh-huh. afternoon, hour and a half, done. But you'll be left thinking, that's not the book.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Might just stick with Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Definitely.
Good choice. On Twitter, Rodri S. Wilson at Rod W has said the Katamari game series just rediscovered the original remastered on Nintendo Switch and falling back in love again. I'm not familiar, but sounds good.
I've seen it come through a couple of times. People are raving about it, and it makes you just want to just pick up your Switch again.
I'm never off my Switch, to be honest, mate. I'm twitching, having to sit here and talk to you jabronis for 3 hours. I want to get back on my Switch.
Jabronis!
Have you got the Nintendo Pass yet?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Games.
Yeah, yeah. And I bought the new Mario Kart the other day as well, which is killing it.
We'll be out of here before you know it, don't worry.
I hope so.
Are we
freeloaders.
Yes.
Anyway, on email, we have an email come through from Michael Colbert, who says, I have a vested interest since I am crew on the show, but Speechless just became available in England, and it's a smart, honest, funny family comedy. Now, have either of you watched Speechless?
No.
It's on E4 in the UK. It's been in the US for 3 years. It's on season 3. And it's an absolutely brilliant family comedy. It's about a family unit who, they have a lot of trials and tribulations because their eldest son has cerebral palsy and he's in a wheelchair and he's non-verbal. So they have to hire like a carer for him who's basically his voice. Mm. And it's a brilliantly funny show. The matriarch of the family is played by Minnie Driver and she's absolutely hilarious. It is genuinely a fantastic show. So do check out Speechless on E4. Now, Michael here said he had a vested interest because he's crew on the show. I was thinking, that's sounds like bullshit. So I went on IMDb, looked him up. He is actually a member of the crew. He's a lighting technician.
So, hey, Michael.
You know, nothing wrong with putting yourself over, Michael. Nah. Putting your show over because it deserves it.
I'll
Speechless
give that-
is fantastic.
I will. It sounds right in my street. I'll give it a go.
Get involved.
I'm being speechless. See what I did there.
Well done, Mark.
Move on,
if other people that are involved in stuff want to get in contact as well, that's awesome. Like, yeah, I'm just
totally.
Currently doing the lighting on the brand new Spielberg film or something.
Yeah.
Do it.
As long as you get us a set visit,
yeah.
I'm down.
Yeah, and some freebies.
Yeah. On Twitter, Ollie Reynolds at Ollymar28 has said the book Paperbacks from Hell by Grady Hendrix is an excellent look into the history of horror fiction from the 70s and the 80s. So good if you're a fan of outrageous horror.
Hey.
He posted photos up as well.
He did, yeah.
How cool does it look?
Yeah.
All those 70s classic, like literally, they don't make covers like that anymore. I sound like a granddad. Normally I'm saying this about music and films. Oh, they don't make them like that anymore.
Yeah.
But they don't. Look at those pictures on that he posted. They're amazing.
Definitely check them out. It looks like a very good read. On Facebook, Dara Begley has said, Ugly Delicious on Netflix, a food travel show for people who don't like food travel shows. A chef looks at one type of food per episode, e.g. barbecue or pizza, and looks at how they've evolved over time and vary from place to place.
Ooh,
that sounds
cool.
Fascinating,
yeah.
It does, doesn't it?
I quite like the sound of that.
Because I am a guy who doesn't really like food travel shows, but that sounds like something I would watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down.
I like food on Just Eat as well.
Yes,
I'm a big user of Just Eat.
Or Deliveroo or Uber Eats.
I just like food.
I just like food
also. Just give me all the food.
We're going to Mackey's.
I'm up for that.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Yesterday, I'm on a diet at the minute, but at weekends I just don't care.
Is that treat day?
Yeah, basically. Yesterday, I ate a whole tub of Haagen-Dazs pralines and cream.
Oh, that's the dream.
Like, how the fuck you pronounce it? But oh god damn, that's good shit. It's like crack.
Oh my god, I would literally I'd be face first in that.
I found a voucher for Domino's, and if you spend £40, you get it for half price.
What?
I was home alone and ate £40 worth of Domino's on my own.
Chicken
wings, chicken kickers, chicken strippers, a full pizza, a garlic bread, some ice cream, starter breadsticks, or what they're called, paper wedges, potato wedges. It's awesome.
Seriously, I'd be in a food coma.
It doesn't matter. It was amazing.
I wouldn't wake up for 3 days.
It's worth it.
Yeah, I too did a similar thing. A pizza, if you spent over £20 at Pizza Hut, you get 50% off. So I got two stuffed crust pizzas today.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yes.
Moving on from our fatness.
Well, we're not going to be able to move on.
No,
true, yeah.
I was stuck in it.
On Twitter, Kieran Brown at Chunky Redbeard has said, for fans of fitness or wrestling, WWE Sheamus has a Brave Change YouTube series where he does other wrestlers' workouts. It's informative and funny, and you'll see a 6'4" brick shithouse get his ass kicked by the likes of Asuka, Daniel Bryan, and Becky Lynch.
Wow.
They are very funny. They're
no,
very good, actually.
It,
yeah. Sheamus is a really entertaining guy. They're very interesting videos. Check
awesome.
Those out.
That sounds cool.
on Facebook. Stephen Lockeridge said, I took my son to watch Vampire Weekend in Islington last Saturday. Absolutely brilliant. Well worth the 6-hour coach trip from Manchester.
Oh, I love Vampire Weekend.
I'm not familiar with their output.
Yeah, I used to follow them probably about a good 10 years ago. But they're fantastic. You know, you've got Mansard Roof, you've got A-Punk, and I think the newest stuff is very kind of Paul Simon-esque, but yeah. I love them. I think they're great. Great little band.
Lovely stuff. And then finally, someone else who's putting themselves over, but I'll allow it. Matthew Caddish, at Matthew Caddish on Twitter, decided to promote his own book, Earthman Jack versus the Ghost Planet. Now, it has very good reviews on Amazon. It looks kind of cool. So I don't mind giving him the old skip to the end bump.
Yeah.
So there you go, Matthew. We promoted your book.
That's on Amazon to buy now.
That is on Amazon to buy now.
That's, I like Amazon.
That. Yes, yes. I think you'd rather say the title again.
The title of the book is Earthman Jack versus the Ghost Planet.
That's
Earthman Jack and the Ghost Planet.
Yeah. Wow. Stuff.
So please do keep sending your recommendations in. You can get us on Twitter at STT Podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast or podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. I think we did well with the swearing.
Yes.
We swore, but I think we were back at our normal levels.
We reduced, which is important.
I think some more than others.
Yeah, I think we were sub-100 on the old fucks. Yes. I don't think we broke the 100 barrier this time.
Why are you like this?
Who hurt you as a child? Yeah. Why are you like this?
We're good people. We don't deserve this.
Talking about hurting as a child, genuinely, have
oh,
you...
Oh, God, where's wow. this going? I'm worried.
No, have either of you watched the Madeleine McCann stuff on Netflix, the series?
I was right to be worried.
Yes, but have you watched it?
No. Because nothing has happened in the investigation for several years.
Yeah.
The reason why true crime documentaries are so good are because of the twists and turns that you don't know about. But we know everything that's happened in this case.
Yeah.
So the documentary just tells us shit we've been reading in the papers for 10
it's
years
supposed to be terrible.
It is.
Some people are like, they interview someone who just works at the hotel and went, yeah, I think I saw her. Oh, brilliant.
Cheers then. Should have told the police.
That made the final cut.
Yeah, but I just thought I'd end with that. So.
Brilliant. Thanks for bringing the tone down.
Your contribution is greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Let's turn it around and talk about the next episode.
There we go.
Hold up.
Yes. Hold up.
Yes, the next episode. Next episode. Hold up. See, we're happy again.
Very good.
Just such a straight up.
What's our main review, guys?
That's a good question. You tell me, what is our main review?
Hellboy.
Well done.
Hell yeah to Hellboy.
Correct.
It's going to be an interesting one because people have already said it's going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. People are already going, oh, you shouldn't do it. It's too soon.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for us to get involved. I can't.
I too can't wait for us to get involved, Mark. I'm
Put your hands out as you say it. This is why we should be filmed.
You also closed your eyes. We're like, yeah.
But it's Neil Marshall.
Yeah.
Ooh. I like the guy. I think he's going to do well.
I love David Harbour as well. I think he's a cool guy.
Yes.
He's going to make a good Hellboy.
We're going to have a blast.
It's going to be a good one. Gemma, who are we mass debating over?
I'm glad you asked. It's David Fincher.
Fincher. Yeah. He's a bloody good rap.
Yeah.
He directed Alien 3. What have you done?
He directed a film a week. But yes. That'll be a good one because I actually don't know what you're going to pick right now. It's one of your favourites.
It's true.
There is a lot to pick from, isn't there? A plethora.
Can't wait.
Plethora of Finchy.
It will be very good. Mark, it's your topic, I believe.
It is, and it's the top three biopics.
Yeah.
And before people start submitting to the tweet, I'm not just going to make it sport, music, any biopic is eligible to this.
That is a big old field.
Yes. I'm going to make it very big for us all to plough into.
Fantastic.
Brilliant. Giggity.
I'm really looking forward to the rewatch. We're going to discuss The Rules of Attraction.
I'm so excited.
Amazing.
I was really heartened with your response, guys. You really went big for it when I said it. I'm glad about that.
Oh,
I think we're all going to tuck into it well. I'm looking forward to it.
Like a modern day counterculture film.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
A film that a lot of people haven't seen. So get out there. As I say, it's on Amazon Prime. Get out there and watch it.
No excuses.
I don't think I've watched it for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it.
Cool.
Yeah.
We're going to be announcing the winners as well from all those amazing competition prizes. Mm-hmm. We've got that signed poster of us.
Amazing.
That's one of our... We're getting
not us. Not me, Gemma and Mark. Although you can have that if you wish.
Yeah. We'll save that for episode 200.
Yeah, that can be arranged.
We take requests.
$49.99 now. Just print them out on our A4 logo. That's a hell of a prize, though.
Yeah.
Amazing
phenomenal,
prize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic stuff.
And I can give a little preview. I can say it now.
Ooh.
We're going to be giving away some cider.
Yes.
No way. Stay tuned for that.
Yes. If there are any kids out there, if you get turned away from the shops because you don't look 18, you can get some us. We'll hook you up. Not really. We'd never do that. It's illegal.
Yes. And we can't hook kids up because that's what happens to certain people that are in. No, I'm not
leave
going
it there.
Let's leave it
going down the rabbit hole. Yes. We were playing round two of what's it called? Flick Me Faster.
Yes.
Fuck me faster.
You call it that.
But I'm
going to call it that.
But I'm going to be the games master.
Okay.
So it's going to be Team Gark or something?
Team Memma.
Whatever it is. Yeah, whatever. You're the games master of Flick Me Faster. It's just that's it. Well,
that's basically a wrap. You've done it again, Mark.
I know.
I'm telling you, straight up G. Yeah.
I know.
Stop
I'm the new Eminem.
You're a more ginger Eminem.
There we go.
Meminem.
I don't know what's happening now.
I don't.
Let's wrap this up. See you in 2 weeks.
This is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo, signing off.